tell a story.
Hi, everybody. We're live.
If you'd like for a pre-show, I can tell a story about using the Vision Pro on the train, which is kind of not, it's mostly not a spoiler for any of my thoughts about it. If we'd like to do that, if you'd rather save anything Vision Pro related for later, though, that's also fine.
I'd rather it be all part of one segment if possible.
All right. All right, then I have nothing to tell you.
So you can tell us about your surprise trip to New York.
All right, well.
So, Casey, you were in New York?
Yes. So normally I would make a big deal of getting your attention and having you meet me whether you wanted to or not. But we had the pleasure of spending a couple of days together just a couple of months ago. And this one was on the sly. And we'll talk about this on Analog, which will post this upcoming Sunday as we record this. But I was colluding with Adina Hurley in order to surprise Mike, who was in town for picking up the Vision Pro, because you have to pick them up in the United States or have it shipped somewhere in the United States, because that's the only place it is right now. And I colluded with Adina to surprise Mike and come up and visit him. And I basically did the same trip that you and I did, in the sense that I came up on, you know, on a weekday, stayed two nights and came back. And so I've been back in Richmond for like 4 hours at this point or something like that. It turns out, I think we might have already gone over this when I was talking about our trip, Marco, but it turns out trains are freaking great. Who knew? we should really look into this as a country. But I spent, I believe it was $88 round trip. So not $88 per leg, round trip from Virginia to New York was $88. That's something like 400 miles each way. And I have no idea what that is in kilometers, because we use stupid units, but with the exception of Fahrenheit, of course. But anyways, it was a long way. And it was like 6.5 hours on the train each way. And the advantage of both the trip to you, Marco, and the trip to see Mike is that I didn't have any particular urgency. Like for American trains, if you have urgency, it's probably not the right choice, not only because it takes a while, but because they're not terribly reliably on time. But I dedicated a day on either end, both for you and for Mike, to just travel. And on the way up, I was fairly late in the intermediary stops, and then wasn't too late getting into Penn Station, or Moynihan, I guess, strictly speaking, or maybe, well, I guess it's Moynihan Hall at Penn Station. Is that right?
I think
something
that's
like that.
Right.
Anyway, my point is I ended up not that late, northbound, and actually it was on time southbound, which is great. But, love the train. I did use Vision Pro on the train a little bit, which we'll talk about later. I have a very funny and very embarrassing story to tell about that. So, you know, I'll be telling because I really like making fun of myself. It's not the kind of embarrassing that you're thinking of, though. That actually was fine. Spoiler alert. But
so what you're saying is you were not embarrassed to be wearing the Vision Pro in public a couple of days after it was launched on a train.
I was embarrassed. Short version, nobody cared. And we can talk about that more later. But
wait, to be fair, this is an Amtrak train in the U.S., so I have to ask, was anybody else really on the train?
Not really.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
we can unpack that more if you want. But on the way up, Amtrak is doing that thing where you can bid to upgrade your seat from coach to business. And on Amtrak, what that means is a little bit more leg room, and you get free drinks, like non-alcoholic drinks on the cafe car. And assigned seats, because the most of the train is, you know, you sit where you want to sit. But in business class, they're assigned seats. And I did that. The minimum bid was $40 to upgrade, which, of course, doubled the fare. But when the fare is only $40 to begin with, I was like, you know what? Let me give it a shot. So I did that. I bid $42, because how could you not? And again, the minimum was $40. And I won. My bid was accepted or whatever on the way up. And I had my business class seat, and it was wonderful. I got a couple of free Diet Cokes, which was great. And it was all well and good until, I think it was either Alexandria or Virginia or Washington, D.C. I don't remember exactly where it was. It was about halfway up through the trip, though, when a gentleman who was the Pigpen of old men sat down next to me. He had the strongest old man stench I think I've ever smelled in my life. God. Like, it's not like body odor. You know what I mean? It was just billowing
an unpleasant
old man.
This is ageism.
And it is ageism, I guess. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
it's
you
odorous.
Know what I'm saying? It's just, he was just billowing old man. And he also decided
you can just
to
say have he was smelly without making it about his age.
Well, but it was that uniquely old man smell.
You're not helping yourself.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Well, we can cut all this. This will just be a gift for the bootleg people. But yeah, so then he sits down next to me, and every part of him. Like when he opened his mouth, there was a different flavor of thing floating my way, which is also not delightful. No, it's not good. But anyway, so yeah, so then I'm stuck though, because I'm in my
business. Your story has derailed.
But I'm stuck because I'm in a business class seat. I can't move my seat. I have an assigned friggin' seat, and I'm now stuck next to Pigpen for
you
the
can't
next 4 hours.
Aroma Pro with you.
You can't downgrade yourself back.
I don't
to
think
a
so.
Regular
seat. Maybe I could have. I don't know. But that was rough. So I did not choose to bid on an upgrade on the return side, and I am glad I didn't, because it was because
now you feel like business class is just inhabited with smelly people.
Well, it could be. You never know. And there's nothing I can do about
same
it.
Same guy is following you,
right? And he had some really uncouth stories to tell, which I will not be sharing even on the bootleg. But oof,
even his story stunk.
Yeah, in a way, yes. And certainly the delivery of the story stank. But
my guess is his politics probably stunk a little bit.
I would assume so. I don't know, but I would assume so. We didn't get into that, thankfully. Oh, but oof, it was a mess.
Talking to people on public transportation?
Not by choice. He decided to tell me the story about what he did as a kid 50 years ago. And I was
See,
like,
you should
oh,
have
God.
Put on the Vision Pro and blocked everything out.
Actually, you know what? So,
I can't hear or see or smell you right now. It's fine.
You're just, right. Well, I could have smelled him for sure. But I didn't get the Aroma Pro upgrade, John. But I should have put it on, even though at this point I was under the impression, erroneously as it turns out, that it doesn't work on the train. And we'll talk about that later. It was no good. So don't bother with business class. Just go and coach. It's really no different. All right. We have some follow-up to do. We have a lot of follow-up to do. And
the show that we have, like, our first impressions of actually using the Vision Pros, we're going to be doing a lot of follow-up first.
About Vision Pro.
Don't look at me. This is all John.
I debated putting all the Vision Pro stuff down in the Vision Pro topic section, but these are just follow-ups about Vision Pro before we get to the meat of Vision Pro. It's all Vision Pro, though.
I mean, technically, isn't everything about Vision Pro follow-up because it's a device that we already talked about before?
No, follow-up
That's
is
true.
A
Let's,
complicated
you know what? Let's
thing
punish
that
you John.
Still don't understand that I could explain to you at length, but you don't want to hear it.
Yeah, we should punish John. We should just do the Vision Pro review right now, Marco. We can go rogue, the two of us.
No.
And this will be John's punishment for putting all this follow-up in the beginning of the show.
I should be rewarded because this is high-quality Vision Pro follow-up.
Is it now?
All right, listeners.
Let's start with Christian Selig, who we do like. And Christian writes, it was funny hearing John talk about this isn't Vision Pro at all. We can skip this.
I know, but it's a celebrity. No, we
can't
do it.
He mentions Vision Pro in the middle there.
Oh, I am under protest. I would just like everyone to know. Christian, who is not guilty, it's John who's the guilty one. Christian writes, it was funny hearing John talk about the YouTube API this week as I was playing around with a different part of the YouTube API for a Vision Pro app.
There you go.
And it got me remembering that back when I started Apollo, without even having to ask, YouTube's API limit was 50 million per day. And I assume that's where that comical 1.8 million per minute other stipulation comes in. After they lowered the limit, they started auditing Apollo annually to know how I was using it. And I used it a fair bit. And shortly after Apollo shut down, they kept reducing me from 50 million all the way back to 10,000 per day, or 0.02% of what I was allowed at peak.
So, those were the days. 50 million per day. Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
All right, so explain to me how this next piece of follow-up is related to the Vision Pro, John?
Because we were talking about zooming things in on the Vision Pro and how close you can get to Pixel Peep.
This is very loose, John. This is a Casey-style stretch.
You're taking longer than the actual item complaining about it.
Please proceed.
This was about Photoshop, and I was complaining about how it didn't zoom the way I wanted it to, and someone on Thread said, hey, here's a video of me doing it, and it zooms the way you said you wanted it. And then I sent a video and said, hey, here's a video of me doing the same thing and it behaving differently. And so then he sent me a picture of his preferences with the preferences that he thought were related to zooming circled in red, and I said, I have all those settings set exactly the same way you do. Eventually, I figured it out. It was the overscroll setting in the Tools section of Photoshop Preferences, and the overscroll setting, when enabled, it allows scrolling past the normal bounds of the window. So that was the secret. If you, like me, want option scroll wheel to zoom where your cursor is all the time, make sure you have overscroll set. And then Proton suggested another way to do it. If you press and hold in sequence the space bar, then Command, your mouse cursor will change to a magnifying glass, and then while holding these keys down, click and hold left mouse button and right drag to zoom in or left drag to zoom out. That doesn't actually solve the problem entirely. If you still have overscroll turned off, it still does the bad behavior in some situations, but it's better than nothing.
All right. Well, our long national nightmare is over. More not Vision Pro follow-up. Russ writes, I have a Euro 50 coin, and it, quote, 50 euro cent, quote, is stamped onto the face of the coin. And someone, I presume Russ, provided a a convenient little image there. Comically, the UK is also in this little stamped in the coin here, which I find funny. But nevertheless, it is a 50 euro cent.
And it's called Sense, yeah, which was a topic of much debate. And also on the previous episode, when talking about the core technology fee, which is 50 euro cents, I said about 100 times 50% instead of 50 cents. I apologize. Every time you heard me say 50%, just substitute 50 euro cents or 50 cents.
Yeah, that's what happens when we get older. Now we're all losing our marbles, all three of us.
Neither one of you, usually when I do that, like the third or fourth time, one of you corrects me. But
I remember you doing it once or twice.
I did
going
it so
to correct
much. It was
you.
So bad. I'm like, why do I keep saying 50%? 50 cents, 50 euro cents.
Yeah, I just couldn't. I didn't want to interrupt your flow, John. And honestly, I didn't notice
that's
it.
That's what follow-up's for.
I didn't notice it as much as you're painting yourself. You shouldn't sell yourself short like that. Anyway, Dmitry Bonial. Okay, that was not even close.
I don't think there's an R in there.
Nope, there is not. Dmitry Bonial writes with regard to the Vision Pro pixel peeping. Unfortunately, you can't get any closer to the screen to pixel peep, as John had hoped. If you do, your Persona's digital nose grease causes the window to dissolve as you go through it. And Dmitry provides a video posted to Mastodon, which we'll link in the show notes.
Yeah, we mentioned that last week, that we didn't know how close you could get without it fading out. And I think the video does a good job of demonstrating where it starts to fade out.
Mm-hmm. And then related to that, it turns out that in the first VisionOS beta, which is, well, like VisionOS 1.1, I believe, there are some release notes that say users will, quote, be able to reposition volumetric scenes much closer than before, which will enable easier direct interaction with the objects in them.
Yeah,
that is useful.
Volumetric scenes,
exactly.
Not windows.
Yeah. Exactly. But that's still nice.
But it's still something. And I did, with a lot of people using Vision Pro, I saw a lot of instances where they would complain that they had arranged their workspaces in such a way that they were kind of on the limit of where the window starts to fade. And like by moving their head around or whatever, sometimes it would fade. So I feel like whatever their fade limit is for objects is for windows is still kind of maybe needs to be pulled in a little bit.
Indeed. Tell me about Vision Pro prescription lens pairing, please.
We were discussing, like, why do you have to pair them? Is this a DRM thing? Some people theorize that to get Zeiss to be the supplier of these lenses, they had to provide some kind of sort of DRM so that they would be the exclusive supplier and people couldn't make knockoff third-party lenses for less money or something like that. But now that we all have know much more about the Vision Pro, it's clear that at least one aspect of the Vision Pro lens pairing is because the lenses affect how the device works and, yeah, you know, like the eye tracking, for example, and you need to sort of calibrate the device based on the prescription, right? In one instance, somebody had the Vision Pro thought they had a different prescription than they actually had, like there was a pairing problem, and the eye tracking was all wonky until they got that straightened out. So it's not just for DRM. It may be for that purposes additionally, but that whole pairing process is essential for the device to work correctly and track your eyes when you have lenses inserted.
Excellent. So I believe John put in the notes, and I love this. There's wider lightning and widest lightning, as it turns out. So over the last couple of days, people have figured out how to eject, if you will, or unpair, perhaps, the cable that goes from the Vision Pro battery pack to the Vision Pro itself.
And by the way, I'm so proud of myself, because the second I saw that battery and I saw a little black dot, I'm like, that's got to be a, you know, stick a paperclip in and eject that connector thing. And lo and behold, it was, which is a miracle, because if I had talked about it in the show, I would have said, no, Apple would never do that. But it totally looks like one of those holes. Well, guess what? It was.
Turns out, although I think I read somewhere, I don't know if we have the link handy, but I thought I read somewhere that they specifically said, do not put a paperclip in there, that you have to use a bespoke tool.
Yes, of course. It's a very special tool. We'll see a picture of it later.
Indeed. So anyway, so there's wider lightning and widest lightning. Wider lightning is the connector between the battery and the Vision Pro. It really legitimately does look like a wider lightning point or port. Man, I cannot speak tonight. What is there, like 10 or 12 pins, something like that?
Yeah, I think like it's 12 instead of 8.
Okay, and then apparently it also runs at a higher voltage than standard USB-C, which is different. And then we also got word, I want to say it was Saturday, or maybe it was late Friday. I forget exactly when it was, but apparently the developer strap is available for purchase. I actually have one in the house. I haven't opened it yet. And I'd actually kind of like to return it if it turns out I don't need it. But I wanted to order it immediately just in case there were supply issues.
I'm in the exact same position with the exact same opinion. It is still in its box. I haven't opened it. And I'm thinking, did I need to spend $300 on this or not?
Exactly. Yeah. So I figure I'm going to do some development without it, see how miserable I am. And if it's not, actually not bad, then I'll return it.
Yeah.
If it's like the watch, I will buy six of them just
yeah.
principle. But anyways, the straps, so I should back up. I'm sorry. So the developer strap is you replace the right hand side white piece on the Vision Pro, the piece that goes from the goggly part through and including the speaker, and then what eventually gets mated to the band that either goes behind your head, over your head, or both. And that means that the developer strap has to include the speaker all over again. So in the house, I have three speakers for the Vision Pro, you know, one left-hand speaker and two right-hand speakers. But the piece de resistance of the developer strap is behind the speaker. There's a little dongle that has a USB-C receptacle, so you can plug your Vision Pro into your computer and then build and run much easier that way. Now, you might ask, how?
The whole design of the developer strap kind of annoys me. I got to say, having used one of these because I bought one, it's really like, so the Vision Pro, one of the less graceful things about it is that you have a cord coming out of the left side all the time running to a battery. Well, if you want to connect it to a computer via a cable for live debugging, if you, again, like, you know, so your other option, if you want to do debugging with Xcode, you want to like build and run on the device to do debugging, you can do that wirelessly, just over, it's regular Wi-Fi debugging. They've had that for forever on the watch, and they've had it kind of, you know, in recent years they've had it for the phone as well and the iPad, and it works fine in recent years. It's just slower. So it, like, any kind of build and run cycle you do in Xcode, you know, send this to the device, go, that process is going to take, you know, maybe two or three times longer over Wi-Fi than it takes over a cable. So there's a pretty good reason why developers want to run cables to their devices most of the time. And the cables tend to be a little more reliable. But honestly, Wi-Fi debugging in the last like year or so with just iPhone development has been way better than it used to be. So anyway, so now with the Vision Pro, brand new platform, you know, designed from scratch, they say, all right, apparently no cable debugging is supported directly. So we're going to have this cabled battery that runs out off one side with a 24-pin connector and a USB-C port on the other end of the battery. You want to wire it to your computer with USB-C? Oh, you can't use that. No. You have to instead buy a $300 accessory to wire this to your computer for development that has to replace the entire other side arm of the thing, and then you have two cables, one on each side, running out from the back
it's
of
symmetric.
It is so cumbersome, and it's such a weird decision. Why didn't they just enable this same data connectivity through the many-pinned custom connector they made
That's the mystery of the battery port. Why does it have even more contacts than regular Lightning when all it is doing so far is providing power? Like, it is a mystery.
I'm sure there's a small amount of communication pins, you know, for
right, but
for
did you need more pins than Lightning?
I mean, it's supplying a lot more power than Lightning ever supported. So
you look at that connector, a custom connector with
probably what it seems like the future in mind, like future capabilities in mind with this large connector, and then they have a USB-C hole in the battery, but oh, you want to connect to your computer USB-C or, you know, through USB-C to the headset? Oh, you can't do that. You have to have two cables running out of it.
We still haven't gotten to why this is in this section, which is that the thing that connects that stiff little developer strap to the headset is another one of those things with a tiny hole where you're not supposed to put a paperclip, but you probably totally can. And what it does is eject the little stiff little things that are on the side of the headset. And so you can put your developer one in. And how does it plug in? It plugs in with an even wider Lightning looking thing that is curved. So it's like curved wider Lightning with many, many contacts. And I think it's asymmetrical. I think there's more contacts on one side than there is on the other. How many different Lightning looking connectors can Apple make? This product alone has two brand new ones that we've never seen before.
They can't stop it. They, you know, they stopped making the main Lightning connector on the new phones, and now they're like, we're itching. We got to keep using Lightning somehow. We're hooked.
Yeah, they have all those machines that know how to make Lightning connector. Well, to be fair, the developer strap one is, I mean, it looks like Lightning, but it's not like a dead ringer for Lightning like the battery one is. It is the fact that it's curved,
the size of the contacts, it's different. And anyway, that $300 strap, yeah, it's expensive, but it does come with a special Vision Pro logo stamped shiny silver ejection tool that's totally not a paperclip.
Indeed, indeed. And
it's a collector's item.
And the same Dimitri writes that the Vision Pro shows up as a, quote, composite device in System Profiler and is unfortunately limited to USB 2 speeds. Unsurprisingly.
There's not enough connectors for it to go faster. Sorry, not enough contacts on the connector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which, by the way, if it's only running at USB 2.0 speeds, why can't you run it over the battery cable?
Isn't like Wi-Fi 7 faster than that, or even Wi-Fi 6E or whatever?
Well, I mean, in all fairness, like the reason why USB development is faster is the same reason why Ethernet is so often faster than Wi-Fi standards that claim to be faster than 100 megabits or 1,000 megabits or whatever. It's because when you have a cable, you have dedicated lanes, and it works. You know, maybe the maximum theoretical peak speed might be lower, but in practice, the speed you get every single time is consistent and fast. And so typically, you know, even when running over USB 2.0 speeds, cabled debugging with Xcode is noticeably faster than Wi-Fi debugging.
Isn't it doing like ad hoc Wi-Fi network between the Mac and the Vision Pro? Like, it's not using connecting to your main Wi-Fi network, right?
I don't know. I understand what you're saying, but I don't know.
Because I think like you'd be closer to theoretical speeds, because if you're doing Vision Pro development, you're probably sitting 2 feet from your Mac.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but I have no idea.
Anyway, there you have it.
And Dimitri also adds
a strap with the Vision Pro ejection tool.
Yep, and Dimitri adds that unsurprisingly, the developer strap didn't detect my 2.5 gigabit Ethernet dongle that I had plugged in either.
Yeah. Good try, though.
Yeah, so it seems like it's not super general purpose as a USB port, necessarily.
I mean,
it
that
is
might
for
be an
its
OS
purpose.
Issue.
Its purpose, yeah. I mean, its purpose is to enable cabled development. That is what it's for.
Yeah, you know, I would hope that perhaps in the future with some software changes, maybe it would become more general purpose. Like, I don't have a personal need for this, but can you imagine how amazing it would be to be able to plug in like a USB-C to HDMI dongle-y thing, and then you could just suck in whatever input you want into the Vision Pro and have it act almost like a TV?
That would be cool.
That would be very slick.
Or more storage, but that would destroy Apple's margins, so they got to charge you this for that 1 terabyte upgrade.
Indeed.
No, they would never do more storage. But I could totally see the like input being a really compelling case for, you know, what if you had a video game console you wanted to play in there or something? Like, that would be really cool. They won't do it, of course, but that would be really cool.
It would be extremely cool. All right, so with regard to Vision Pro weight, and we're going to talk about this article in the future as well, I think, but there's a very good, I thought it was very good, Vanity Fair article that came out, I don't know, sometime over the weekend, I think, and Richard Howarth, the Vice President of Industrial Design, said, quote, "There's nothing we could have done to make it lighter or smaller," Howarth explained. Quote, "This is the state of the art." I don't know if that's true, but I believe it.
Okay, it's there's nothing
to Richard,
we could have done. Like,
nothing. So here's like my translation of that is, if we made it out of aluminum, which we're totally going to do, and there's no way we're ever going to change that, there's nothing we could have done to make it lighter or smaller. And that I believe. If you look at the teardowns, they did a really good job of this thing. Uses lightweight materials. If you say it has to be made of a single piece of aluminum that's carved out, they did a good job of that. I'm not so sure it needs to be a piece of aluminum. Could it have been a piece of plastic? Maybe it couldn't. Maybe the plastic would melt. Maybe the plastic wouldn't be stiff enough. I don't know. But Richard Howarth is unequivocally saying there's literally nothing they could have done to make it lighter or smaller when the thing is made out of aluminum and glass.
And
I'm
also
going to give that a little side eye.
Yeah, and also like there, you know, the implication here is the feature set we decided to ship cannot be made lighter or smaller. Well, you know, did you have to have the eyesight thing on the outside? You know, if the answer to that becomes a no, then you can lose a bunch of components and lose the glass, and you know, so there's a lot
I'm
of.
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say within the feature set, because then I look at like, you know, things like the Meta Quest Pro and other like similarly high end headsets, and somehow they're not made out of solid pieces of aluminum. I don't know. Like, it was so unequivocal, I felt like it was worth calling out. It's like, you did a great job. I still feel like it could have been lighter.
Sorry, John. With regard to peripherals, Vision Pro only works with some Bluetooth peripherals as per a support document. Apple Vision Pro compatibility with third-party Bluetooth devices and accessories isn't guaranteed. If you have trouble connecting Apple Vision Pro to your third-party device, contact the device's manufacturer for help.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, we've heard in particular this seems to apply a lot to like mice and trackpads and stuff. That basically, you can use Apple stuff, and if you try to use anyone else's stuff, it may or may not work.
I heard some people who had some Apple stuff that wasn't working with it until they did, like, you know, the firmware update on the Apple devices. So even within the Apple realm, you have to make sure your keyboard's firmware is up to date. And by the way, if you're wondering how to do that, you can Google for it. But like, since I use my Apple keyboard plugged in, apparently it will never do a firmware update unless it's connected through Bluetooth. So you have to, like, unplug it, connect it through Bluetooth, and I think, like, go to the system settings or something, and it will update the firmware. And then you can plug it back in.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's fascinating. Speaking of your piece of garbage computer, John, Apple Vision Pro's virtual display feature works with Intel Macs, but limited to 3K resolution. Womp womp. If you have if you have a Mac with Apple Silicon, writes Apple, it can appear in Apple Vision Pro at resolutions up to 4K. If your Mac has an Intel processor, it can appear at resolutions up to 3K.
I guess I just don't have enough GPU power in this machine.
Seems
that
not.
Has more GPU power than any other Mac.
Mm-hmm. Seems not.
And then related to that, some people were asking because, like, I don't know, a lot of reviewers seem to be saying this unequivocally and just getting it wrong, saying, like, that you can't use the Vision Pro to project the screen from your desktop Mac. That is not true. You can't, like, if you look at all the Apple documentation, and literally I know people who have taken their Mac Studio and projected it into their Vision Pro, it doesn't have to be a laptop. Now, when you have a laptop, I think there are some enhanced features, like the little floaty thing over the top of it or whatever that you click into to do the thing. But even if you have a plain old desktop Mac, you can do the mirroring thing where you see your Mac screen inside Vision Pro. So don't worry about that.
Yeah, anybody who's using screen mirroring in Vision Pro, so there's the one way to do it where, like, you look at your laptop and it sometimes puts up the little Kinect bubble above it, as John was just saying. But the other way to do it, which is much more reliable and will show your desktop as well, is if you open up the control center in the Vision Pro, there's one of the buttons in the control section of it is screen mirroring for the Mac, and you hit that and it just lists your Mac and you just pick it from a list. I have found so far that is far more reliable than looking at my MacBook Pro and waiting for it to say connect.
Indeed. Moving right along, the Vision Pro syncs data when not in use, and I actually have a little bit of experience with this myself. So there's a MacRumors post that says the battery pack for the Vision Pro also powers Apple Vision Pro when you're not wearing it, allowing the device to sync your mail photos and more. So last night I was using the Vision Pro in the hotel room, watching a little bit of 3D Black Panther Wakanda Forever, just to kind of try it out and see what I thought, and I left it plugged in overnight, and when I had taking the Vision Pro off to go to sleep, I want to say it was at like 80 or 90% battery, something like that. When I woke up, it was at like 30%. It's like, wow, what the hell happened? And then it occurred to me, oh, I bet it was syncing stuff, because it seemed like a lot more photos were actually on the device than were previously, and so on and so forth. And then I read this in the show notes, so I suspect that this is all one and the same thing.
Yeah, and it's like, for something with such short battery life, if you're not plugged in, it's important to actually give it time to, like, you're like, why don't I see all my photos? Well, it has to at some point have time to download those photos. And we know that all of Apple's photos things are afraid to do that unless you're not using the device. So don't reflexively disconnect the power every time you stop using it, because then it will never have time to download your photos, because you're either using it or it's literally powered off.
Is that the Vision Pro version of force quitting all your apps on the iPhone?
Yeah, basically. I have a story about that a little bit later too, but yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah, that's not good. With regard to performance throttling, Apple is trying to get ahead of the gate, apparently. Apple Vision Pro has built-in software and hardware systems that help reduce performance impacts that may be noticed in certain conditions, such as a battery with a low state of charge, a high peak power situation, or a chemically aged battery. The system is automatic, always on, and works to provide the best possible performance. Power needs are dynamically monitored, and performance is managed to address these needs in real time. The system allows Apple Vision Pro to balance and reduce performance impacts as much as possible. The user may or may not notice the effects on device, which may be temporary, depending on the device battery state and the tasks that your Apple Vision Pro is handling. Some examples of these effects might include longer app launch times, lower frame rates, reduced wireless data throughput, screen dimming, or lower speaker volume. If your device performance has been impacted by an aged battery and you would like to get help with a replacement, contact Apple support.
I feel like they're really covering their bases here. We're just like, it could get hot and run low on battery and things are going to get janky.
Yeah,
you've been warned.
Well, I mean, but to their credit, at least the battery is external, and so it's very, you know, it's kind of costly to replace, but it's very easy to replace.
Yeah, yeah.
Unlike most of their devices, where if you have an aged battery, you know, it can become very difficult.
Take it apart.
Yeah.
And the people who have taken apart, we'll have links in the show notes to the iFixit teardown. So the people who have taken apart the battery pack, there's the rating that's on the outside of, like, the milliamp hours or the watt hours of the battery pack, right? But when they took it apart and looked at the actual like little black, you know, lithium ion pouch battery, and they're not pouches, whatever they are, like the battery packs that are in there, it seems like, based on what's stamped on that stuff, that the number that's on the outside of the battery pack in watt hours is 20% lower than the actual capacity. So they may essentially be giving you 20% more battery, but then lying to you and saying there's not 20% more battery in here, like essentially forcing that battery to never go above 80% charge. It's basically like three big iPhone batteries inside there. So that's interesting if they're doing like essentially the electric car thing of like, this is how much battery you have to use. Yes, there's more battery in there, but that's not for you. Kind of like how SSDs are over-provisioned or whatever. And I think that's a really good idea, especially for something with such low battery life as the, you know, 2.5 hours for the Vision Pro.
John has been on a tear with regard to Vision Pro color reproduction. And I'm not going to handle this, John. This is all you. But I will say that when you started down this path, I was like, John, nobody cares. Nobody cares. You're the only one who cares. Nobody cares. And then I was using my Vision Pro in my hotel room yesterday, day before, whenever it was. And I was doing the Mac virtual display thing where your laptop is in the Vision OS world. And I looked down at my MagSafe connector and the laptop was charging at the time. But I tell you what, whatever color that charging indicator was, it was not the orange I expected. So even though in most cases I don't notice this at all, even having watched a modern film on the Vision Pro, there may be something more here than I originally gave you credit for, John.
Well, so here's the thing. Like, obviously, one of the reasons I'm evaluating the Vision Pro is because I watch a lot of television and movies, and this is a great television and movie watching device. So how does it measure up? And I started down this journey learning that one of the areas where the Vision Pro is behind not just like good television sets, but also behind Mac displays, is that the Vision Pro displays, for all their amazingness, which we will discuss in a little bit, don't even do 100% of the P3 color space, which Macs have done for many, many years, right? We'll put a link to the show notes to show you a diagram of how big is the color space for like plain old HDTV or the P3 color space or the more modern Rec 2021. So good televisions like mine do 100% of P3, and so do pretty much all good Mac monitors, but they also do over 90% of Rec 2020. The Vision Pro doesn't even do 100% of P3. So for color reproduction, it is not really up to the task of showing all the colors in that Hollywood, modern Hollywood movie as well as a television set. Probably not a big deal, but worth considering. This is a first generation thing, and I was kind of surprised to see that it didn't even cross the bar that good Mac monitors have crossed ages ago. And this, of course, led me down a journey of like display specs, because now people have these, they're tearing them down, they're putting them underneath microscopes. So here's what iFixit had to say about the Vision Pro resolution, as measured by literally ripping out the Sony displays and looking at them in a microscope and measuring them. Their guesstimate for resolution, and I think there's been official resolution numbers, but anyway, I'm just telling you iFixit's guesstimate based on measuring, right, is there that each one of the little eye displays is 3,660 by 3,200 pixels, and that is about 11.7 million pixels per display, which is roughly the total of 23 million that Apple says it is. And the important thing that they were discussing is, like, you know, how good does this display look? I know we always talk about DPI or PPI, pixels per inch, when we talk about Mac monitors and retina resolution. But now, once we're talking across Vision Pro and iPhones and all this other stuff, it's the equation changes a little bit, because, you know, those Vision Pro screens are like less than an inch from your eyeball. Like, they're really close to your eyes. So all the stuff of like, oh, a good Mac monitor has to be 200 PPI. Yeah, that's when you're looking at the monitor from like a foot and a half, 2 feet away. What about when it's 1 centimeter away from your eyeball? Suddenly what you care about now is not PPI, which the PPI for these screens is insane. I think it's over like 3,000. What you care about is pixels per degree. As in, if you look 1 degree to the right, how many pixels have you just crossed, right? And there's 360 degrees all around you. So pixels per degree, PPD. And the Vision Pro is 34 PPD, which is apparently pretty good for a headset display. And it's got roughly 100 degree field of view, which is okay. I think the Meta Quest one is a little bit wider one. According to THX, the movie people, the ideal viewing angle for movies is 40 degrees. And the minimum recommended angle is 36 degrees. So you've got a 100-degree field of view, and if you're watching a movie the way THX wants you to watch it, and like the Motion Picture Association have similar numbers, the movie screen should be 40 degrees in your field of view. So you shouldn't really be filling your entire field of view with the movie screen. But, you know, hey, you do you, whatever feels comfortable. Some people like to sit in the front row. Anyway, so that led me down the road of doing the PPD calculator for all my other devices. I first compared it to my iPad Pro 11-inch, which I watch a lot of stuff on sitting in bed. That only has 28 PPD when viewed from the distance that I view it, of like 14 inches. It has 3.9 million pixels, which is fewer pixels than a single one, significantly fewer pixels than a single one of the Vision Pro displays, and it has a lower PPD, a lower pixels per degree, and an 86-degree field of view at that distance, right? So Vision Pro wins in terms of resolution, number of pixels, probably everything except for color reproduction, because again, iPad Pros do 100% of P3 at the least. A 65-inch 4K TV from 5 feet away is 76 PPD and 8.3 million pixels. So it's fewer pixels by a little bit, but it's higher PPD.
Wait, isn't that a bit close to be sitting to a 65-inch TV 5 feet away?
I don't know. I measured it in my house, and my couch is kind of farther away, so I subtracted a foot or two. But like 5 feet, you know, it depends on if you're in like a, you know, some people have their TVs surprisingly close where they can actually stick out their feet and almost touch the television. But 5 feet, I don't know. You can adjust it. It's okay. It's still higher PPD. Like it's not more than double, like 76 to 34, but it's, you know. Anyway, we'll link to the PPD calculator so you can put in the distance, because the distance matters, obviously. So you can put in the distance that your TV is. So get out a tape measure it to your couch, and then, you know, put in the distance if you're curious. And that's 5 feet away from a 65-inch TV is a 51-degree field of view. Which is still a little bit closer than the THX wants it. And then finally, Pro Display XDR from 2 feet away, which is about how far I sit from my monitor, that's 20.3 million pixels, which is close to the amount of one of the Vision Pro displays, and it is 100 PPD at a 60-degree field of view. So the PPD of Vision Pro is better than an iPad. It's not as good as a TV and definitely not as good as a Pro Display XDR.
Yeah, and I think, and we'll get to this later as we talk about our experiences with it, but I look forward in general, I look forward to the Vision Pro display is getting much better. And it's interesting because, like, they are remarkably good in their category right now. Like, they are cutting edge and super high end in their category. But this kind of gives you some idea of, like, how far they have to go before they're really going to compete on a lot of these specs with professional monitors, like what we get in almost every other Apple product.
Because they're so close to your eyes. Like, there are feet of engineering. Like, they showed in the diagrams and the videos that we'll link of, like, how many Vision Pro pixels can fit inside one iPhone Retina pixel. It's like, these pixels are like the size of red blood cells. They're so amazing because they're so close to your eyes.
I need to just clarify here. That's not you being hyperbolic. I read somewhere, I don't have the link handy, that no, that is legitimately an accurate comparison. They are roughly the size of a red blood cell.
They are... very, very. It's an amazing, you know, and, you know, it's not just Apple that has these displays. Sony, I'm sure, will sell them to other people once they fulfill Apple's demand. And I think the Meta Quest Pro has something close to that as well. But yeah, moving back from the monitor is a big win. So, like, Pro Display XDR is, you know, or any, essentially any Retina monitor, like the Studio Display, anything, any Mac Retina monitor with around 200 PPI viewed from normal monitor distances is better, has finer detail than the displays. But that's because the displays are just, like, stuck to your eyeballs, right? So it's still an amazing technological feat. But, yeah, they've got a little way to go to catch up to our plain old monitors.
Indeed. And then we will put a link in the show notes to the iFixit teardowns in video form. And they had at least one news, like, blog post about it. So we'll put links to all these in the show notes. I haven't seen the videos yet, but I glanced at the text in picture teardown, and it was fascinating. I mean, a lot of it I felt like we had seen in Apple's like marketing materials and whatnot, but it's still fascinating.
There's a lot of stuff inside there.
I strongly suggest that you watch at least the part one video, because the amazing thing about it is what it takes to disassemble it. Because it really, you know, Apple's been you know, talking about how this is the most complicated consumer electronic device ever made, or the most, you know, whatever words they're using. And when you see this video, you're like, oh, wow, that's correct. Because there is so much stuff crammed into the Vision Pro. It, like, no wonder it's so expensive. You know, not only are they using very high-end components, but just the assembly alone on this it must be absurdly expensive because there is just there are so many parts. They're arranged in such like all you know crazy custom ways, all in a very small space with probably ridiculous tolerances. Like I can't even imagine the logistics of manufacturing this. So yeah, it is worth watching that part one video just to see all those different parts that are in there and what it takes to actually disassemble it.
It kind of makes me even more annoyed that the XDR doesn't have a camera in it, or if it did, it would be a cruddy camera, when looking how many sensors and cameras and IR sprayers and LiDAR things are jammed into that tiny device. It's only $3,500. It's a bargain. One more thing about the teardowns. One of the more destructive teardown people who just like damages things as part of his whole shtick spent a little bit of time investigating the scratch resistance of the front glass. And here's the thing about the front glass. The front glass is a quote-unquote glass laminate, but unfortunately/fortunately, the top layer of the laminate is plastic. And that's there, I assume, so that if it shatters, little pieces of glass don't go flying out into the world, right? Like kind of safety glass type of thing. But that top-level plastic, super easy to scratch. Between 2 and 3 on the Mohs hardness scale, which is not hard. And you may say, oh, I don't care if there's scratches over my fake eyeballs. What you care about, if there's a scratch over one of the umpteen cameras that are on the front of that thing. So be careful with your Vision Pros and do not scratch it.
I wonder if people will, to be clear, I have not done any research and do not recommend that you do this. For years, there have been like certain nice watches that for either cost or like retro reasons had plastic crystal glass on top. So, you know, a plastic crystal instead of a sapphire crystal. And there are all these polishing compounds that people have learned to use in that world that if you got a scratch on your plastic crystal, you could use, I forget what it's called, but there's like, you know, just polishing compound of some kind.
Yeah, use them for car headlights too when your car headlights get cloudy.
Yeah. So I wonder if, again, please don't do this without doing more research, but I wonder if that could actually be a small fix if you have only minor scratching on the front, if it is indeed like a plastic-based front layer. Maybe that would work, but again, please don't do this. It would be an area to look into, maybe.
Yeah, the plastic layer, it's a laminate, so it's like plastic with glass and then plastic, right? But that plastic layer looks about as thick as Saran wrap, so you do not have a lot of thickness.
Oh, so maybe totally ignore what I just said, then. That's not enough.
I mean, maybe it's still possible with a light scratch, but yeah, I mean, because otherwise it's $700 or $800 to get it replaced, or what is it, $300 with AppleCare Plus?
Yeah.
All right,
there's a reason that little boot comes with the thing, right?
Yeah,
that's right.
It's like a little
sock.
All
right, so how do we want to skin this cat? I guess, do you want to start with John and your experience with Vision Pro?
Yeah, mine will be the briefest because I have the least time with this, but it is now a non-zero amount of time. I did the in-store demo thingy that they offer.
I'm very glad you did. Did you do the thing where you just walk in, or did you sign up in advance?
I signed up for an appointment, and the first weekend it was for sale. They wouldn't let you sign up for an appointment, so I had to sign up for the Monday after the weekend. I don't know how long they're going to be doing this in the store, but I would encourage everybody, hey, it's free. You get to try Vision Pro for free. You can make an appointment, schedule some time to do it, and, you know, get while the getting's good, right? Anyway, I went to do this just to have some experience with it at all. The one thing to note about the experience is when they were setting it up, obviously they've only been doing it for like 2 days. There's this whole big process that's not that interesting where they measure your glasses and have you scan your face with your phone and do, you know, all this stuff. And then they bring the Vision Pro out with the lenses already in it. It's all nice and Apple-y. And then they have an iPad where the person who's guiding you through it will be able to see what's on your screen, right? And that whole process of like pairing, it was like an iPad mini, pairing the iPad to the Vision Pro so they can see and stuff wasn't working. And I could clearly see that the person who was doing the demo was like, you know, trying to hit a button. It wasn't working. And I got to see right off the bat, when things aren't working, what do you need to do? Twist that power connector on the Vision Pro because there's no on-off button, right? You can't just turn it off and then turn it back on. You got to disconnect the power connector and connect it back in. The person did this a few times and eventually called over one of the more senior Apple Store people to say, hey, I can't get the thing to pair or whatever, right? And you know what the solution was, of course. I learned this from messing with my Sonos stuff. You learn this by doing it. I learn this every time I help my kids with something's wrong with their computer. What is the first thing you try? They'll spend an hour banging their head against it. They'll be super mad. They'll come to you and say, you need to fix this. And then when I fix it, they'll say, what did you do? And you know what I did.
You unplugged it and plugged it back in?
You got it, baby. Person needed to reboot their iPad Pro as well. Don't reboot the headset. Reboot both devices. Why do I reboot the Sonos? Reboot the phone. Now it's working. Always turn it off and then on again. That started working. So putting the thing on my face, I had read so much about the comfort and fit of the thing. I kind of knew what I was going for in terms of like how tight should the strap be, where should you feel the pressure. I tried to kind of make the pressure even between like my forehead and my cheekbones, right? They did not offer the dual loop, so it's just a single thing only. So I got that as good as I could get it. I did notice, and I don't know if this is a prescription lens thing or not. Maybe you two can tell me, or at least Marco can tell me, because correct, Marco, you don't have prescription lenses at all in yours?
I actually got the reader lenses. I'll get to that later, but I've been using them.
Okay, well, anyway, I have the prescription lens, obviously, and I did notice what I thought, and I continue to think, is some kind of reflection of Apple Store beige. You know, the Apple Store beige, like the tables and everything, right? Some kind of reflection of Apple Store beige in the lenses inside the headset at certain angles. And there is light, like the light guard thing does let light in. So there are places where the light is coming in. I don't know if that was light coming from like behind me, like in the gaps between my like temples. You know what I mean? Occasionally, I did see that. I assume a more controlled lighting environment or a better fit would solve that problem, but I just thought it was worth noting.
It would not.
No, I've seen a fair bit of something that's either a smudge, but I don't think it is, or reflective inside the Vision Pro. And this has happened to me fairly regularly, so maybe my fit is totally jacked. I don't know, but I don't have any lenses in mind because remember, my eyes are trash, but the only way I can fix my eyes are with hard contacts. And so I didn't put any lenses in mine. I don't have any in the house. You know, mine is a vanilla Vision Pro.
So for whatever it's worth, so a bunch of reviewers did mention glare issues and you know, some, you know, whether it's glare or flares or both on lenses, that is definitely an issue with even the stock, you know, no additional lenses configuration. But also for whatever it's worth, I'm in kind of a maybe unusual position here that I have some need for reading glasses at certain distances, but not a strong need. So I actually can use the Vision Pro just fine with or without these. So I've actually spent a decent amount of time with both trying to figure out like what, you know, what is best and sharpest and most comfortable for me. And so I can tell you for sure there is some flare with the stock lenses no matter what.
Yeah.
And then also when I add the reader lens inserts to it, there is noticeably more. Like I like if you just like look up and down, like move your head up and down, you will see reflections on the lenses with almost any content you're looking at.
Do you think it's a reflection, like an internal reflection of the screen image, or do you think it's light from outside?
I think it's internal reflection, but I could be wrong. I mean, I'll get to all this. I'll do some of this stuff early. I'm glad I went to the store because I got to try on a few different face shields and pads because I couldn't, however I was wearing it, there was always a decent amount of light leaking around my nose. And apparently what we're hearing from people is that that's actually kind of to be expected, and there isn't really a perfect nose seal for many people. Yeah. I guess I have an insufficiently sized nose. I'm not sure.
I mean, my nose is plenty big and I still had that gap. I think it's
same and same.
It's just the nature of the beast, I feel like. Some people were even arguing like that if you did maybe get an aftermarket thing to seal off that part, that it would just make the environment even less kind of breathable. I know the fabric is breathable and everything, but like maybe that air gap actually serves a function, but yeah.
Yeah, regardless, so there's noticeable like glare and reflections on the lenses whether you use lens inserts or not, but there are more of them if you use the lens inserts.
Yeah. So the first thing you see obviously after the eye calibration thing where the little motors move the stuff to line themselves up, is pass through where you see the world around.
Slow down. We should be a little more specific because remember, not everyone has tried this. So the first thing that happens when you put on the Vision Pro, if it's not yours and you haven't set this up for yourself yet, is you see an image that's kind of a representation of the Vision Pro, and it says, all right, mash down on the digital crown. And what it does is it moves the eyepieces laterally inside the Vision Pro in and out in order to fit your pupillary distance. I think I both said that right.
Distance between each of your pupils, the center point of your eyeballs. That's what it's trying to line up the things because it really, and it, when it's not lined up, you see like a double image. And when it is lined up, you don't. I mean, you might have seen this at the eye doctor when they're adjusting the little thing that you're going to look through and you see a double vision until it like comes together. Anyway, that's that. And yeah, then it turns on the pass through. the pass-through, I've seen a lot of videos of people using the pass-through, and obviously now I'm using the pass-through. The pass-through is kind of like you're looking through sunglasses indoors, in that it's dimmer, and I think that is a software choice that they're making the real world dimmer. And the reason I think it's a software choice is that when the UI starts coming in, the UI is not dim.
Well,
the UI is
plenty
bright.
That is customizable in software, and they kind of raise and lower the light level in different conditions intentionally,
right,
in software. So sometimes it is like just pure, you know, brightness, transparent, etc. But like if for instance you go to watch video content, usually it will dim the surroundings there. There's also some of the environments that you can set are just lighting modifications to your transparent environment. So, you know, some of the environments you can set are like, I'm going to be on top of a mountain, but some of them are just like, make my room have fall light or something like that.
Yeah.
And it just
kind
of tints the lighting color of the room or makes adjustments. So anyway,
yeah, but anyway,
that is variable.
If you try one of these on, you're like, oh, the Vision Pro displays suck. This is so dim. It's not the displays, believe me. It's the brightness is not their weak point. So that was interesting to note. And oh, by the way, I had some friends who also did the in-store demo. One of my friends said he did this before me. He did, like, I think the walk-in thing. Or no, actually, I think he it must have been the day before me. Anyway, he said, hey, I tried it. And at one point, they had me going through panoramas, which I'll get to in a little bit. And I got motion sick and I had to bail on the demo. And I was like, oh, no.
Which is panoramas.
My friend is not known for being particularly motion sick. And he was getting motion sick in the, you know, 30-minute in-store demo of Vision Pro. I hadn't even thought about this in ages. Like, you know, VR, you know, basically the reason I had thought about it is we've seen tons of reviews, all the, you know, people who use the WWDC, all the press that went to review it then, the reviews that are on YouTube. Pretty much nobody is mentioning motion sickness. And then I hear, like, a day or two before I'm going to do my demo, that my friend got so motion sick he had to bail out of the demo. And I'm like, this does not bode well for me, right? So I was so afraid. I even told the person, I'm like, just to let you know, I get motion sick. So if there's anything you can do to, like, help me prevent that from happening, and I was already going to try to, like, not wave my head around like a madman or whatever. But anyway, that's my mindset going into this. So the UI comes up. I'm struck by the stability of the UI. Again, I'm pretty sure this is the very first VR headset I've ever used. But what I have seen, of course, is tons of video of other people using VR headsets, like they'll post a YouTube video or whatever. And I've also seen tons of video of people using Vision Pro when they post their videos. And this is one of the weaknesses of Vision Pro from marketing. If you've seen a video of, like, this is what the person inside the headset is seeing, and everything's shaking all over the place and it looks janky, rest assured it does not look like that when you're in the headset, right? Because your eyes and brain perform a stability function. And what that means is that, like, when those icons of the home screen are floating over the table, what everybody says about them is true. I am amazed at how non-jittery crap is inside here. Whatever. Windows, icons, things. And what I mean by that is, like, you're seeing pass-through, you see the Apple Store table, you see the whole Apple Store. When those icons plop themselves in front of you, they're like a foot in front of you or whatever, over a certain position in the table, they do not move from that position in the table. Now, again, I wasn't shaking my head around like a madman. I'm sure I could jank it up a little bit. I'm intentionally trying to go, you know, but they don't jitter, they don't jump, they don't move around. They are so incredibly stable, and I'm like, okay, they did a good job with this. Again, I have nothing to compare it to. I'm just saying that, like, objectively, with no other comparison other than what does a real circle hanging in front of me look like, they looked very, very stable, and it was very impressive. On the flip side of that is the part where you take your hands and put them in front of anything that it's displaying, a window, yeah, a background, a panorama. Their ability to mask out your limbs, not hot. It is probably the most janky thing that I have experienced inside the Vision Pro, is how it masks out your limbs. Granted, it's a hard problem, but if you want to see something that looks all flickery and cyberpunk, put your hand in front of something. It is what it is. It's not a big deal because it really doesn't affect you're using things. And believe me, you're not going to have your arm out in front of you when you're doing stuff, right? I'm sure the Apple Store people would have told me not to do that if I had done it, but of course I already knew not to. Eye tracking. This is one of my experiences when I was doing stuff. I was trying to sandbag a little bit, but obviously I already know how everything works, right? So they're like, do this and look at that and do this thing or whatever. And one of the things I experienced, they'd be like, okay, just go, you know, see that X over there? Look at that and close the window and whatever. And I would look at it and the X wouldn't highlight. And then I'd look at it harder. I don't know what I was trying to do in my brain.
Wait,
but
what,
like,
does that mean?
Like, once I'm looking at it, I'm already looking at it. And they'd be like, yeah, just look at the X and close it. And I'm like, believe you me, I am looking at that X, right? And so sometimes it wouldn't highlight. And so what I would do in those scenarios is I would look at it, and then I would look at it harder, which does nothing and means nothing. But like mentally in my brain, I'm like, maybe I need to look at it harder. But then I would just click, which is, you know, the pinching gesture with your hand. Then I would just tap and it would close the window. But the X was never highlighted. So I'm like, so that's how it's going to be. Basically, like, look, even if it doesn't highlight, I don't know if it's like the iPhone keyboard where it's like, you didn't hit the key you want, but I know you were probably going for that X. So there you have it. So maybe the calibration was off or something, but there's that. Second thing is, at one point I was watching video, which I'll get to in a little bit. And there was, I wanted to resize the window to make it super big and everything and move it around and stuff. But the Windows controls weren't there. Like normally when you look down below a window, you see the little control appear and you can look at it and move the window and you can look at the lower right corner and see the resize thing. And I was looking in those places and the controls weren't appearing. So again, I would look at them harder and nothing would happen because that doesn't mean anything or do anything. It's like I'm trying to conjure an orb and right around the line parlance. It's like I'm thinking in my head, like, look harder. But no, they would never appear. And the demo person was stumped as well until we eventually figured out it's kind of like a Mac UI where you have to click before it will show the controls. So yeah. I did the pinch gesture once, and then now when I look, well, and if, in hindsight, it makes perfect sense, because if you're watching a video, you don't want every time your eyes wander to the bottom of the screen, like say it has subtitles, you don't want the friggin' resize controls to constantly fade in and out as you read the subtitles, right? And so this prevents that. So just FYI, a little UI tip there. And then finally, they were having me launch a bunch of apps, and one of them was like, go to the compatible app section. They had me launch an iPad app. I think they have everybody launch the same iPad app, which is some like Yumly, like DoorDash type service, right? So it's an iPad app. It's running in a window, and when I, you know, it had like a tab bar at the bottom of the iPad app, and when I looked at like the home icon and the star icon or whatever, they would not highlight because it's an iPad app, and whatever control they were using had no facility for an idea of anything hovering over it, right? Because, you know, an iPad app might have something hovering because it has cursor support, but whatever control they were using didn't know about hover. So, but I could still use them. So if I looked at the star, nothing would happen. It wouldn't highlight. But if I did the tap gesture, it would click the star. But there were other elements in that UI that did highlight when I looked at them because they had kind of a sheen on it. So that's an interesting, you know, side effect of using iPad apps. I'm sure you'll both have much more to say about that when you talk about using Mac apps, which is something I did not get to do despite asking. One final thing on basic interactions. And I wrote a whole blog post about this. We'll link it in the show notes. It's about spatial computing. But from my perspective, indirect interaction. The Vision Pro does not ask you to go out and grab things for the most part. There are some things that do that. You can put your finger out and a butterfly goes on it. And in those 3D scenes that we were talking about, you can manipulate things with your weird blinky hands that aren't masked out well or whatever. But in generally, you're looking at things and then you're essentially clicking on them by making a gesture with your hands, and it doesn't really matter where your hands are, which is an incredible benefit because you do not want to hold your hands up. You want them to just be sitting in your lap. It's way more comfortable. But because we are human beings and we're used to reaching out and grabbing things, I found myself, even though I knew about this, even though I wrote a blog post about it, I found myself unconsciously essentially reaching for the lower right corner of Windows to resize them, and that does not work. Like, you know what I mean? I'd be looking at video and I'd be like, now I just want to make this bigger. And we do it on the Macs all the time. Like, you're looking at video and you just grab the lower right corner and you resize it while you're still looking at the video. I found myself reaching my hand out to the very real looking lower right corner of the video player and trying to pinch it with my hand and drag it out to make it bigger. And I did this more than once. And both times I'm like, why isn't this working? And I'm like, of course it's not going to work. That's not how this UI works. So that was I kind of wish it did work that way because that would be super awesome. But this is another thing that everyone is saying, which is like, you have to get used to the idea that you literally have to look at everything you manipulate, which is not how we work in the real world. I mean, I hardly ever look at my mouse. And even when I'm using my mouse, sometimes I'm not looking at the cursor because I know where the cursor is and I'm using it to resize while I'm looking somewhere else. So that was interesting and embarrassing and weird, kind of like when I pinched the scroll a paper magazine, pinched the zoom a paper magazine, and it does not work.
Yeah.
Panoramas was the next thing. That's just the panoramas you take with your iPhone, right? And they look cool because they wrap around you. Panoramas, what they show you is something that I found was one of the defining characteristics of this device. This device will show you the limits of the source material.
Yep.
Panoramas do not have enough resolution. And this is like the Apple demo panorama. So whatever this panorama was taken on, it's the best panoramas provided. These aren't mine. These are Apple's. It does not have enough resolution to look really cool, but that's not the worst thing about it, because the next thing we did was environments, where you turn the little dial and you can be, you know, wherever that place is with the lake and the mountains, or you could be on the moon, or you could be stuff like that. And for someone who has never been in VR before, this, and this is towards the end of the demo, this is where we start what I would call the convincing phase of the demo. Because all the rest of the start is like, oh, you've got Windows and it looks real cool. But if you don't know about the technology involved, it's not that impressive. Once you turn that dial, you might be thinking, if you've never used a VR headset or if you've never used Vision Pro, you're going to turn that dial and it's going to show a big wraparound picture of a mountain. That is not what's going to happen. What it's going to show is what looks to you, for all the world, like a real mountain and a lake. And it's just 3D. Like, I went to Captain EO when I was a kid at Epcot. I've seen 3D movies. It's just showing a different picture to each eye. They had, like, those, what are they called? Things in, like, the 1900s that you'd hold up to your face.
Stereoscopes?
There's some other word for them, right? Showing a different picture to each of your eyes is not a new human technology. What is new, I think, is showing each eye 11 million pixels, the size of red blood cells in front of your eyes. And that does actually make a difference. The difference between looking at a panorama in this thing and turning on one of those environments is huge. And now, it's probably going to be like, I don't know, think of anything that happened in my lifetime. A color television, high-definition television. I remember when I first saw a high-definition television that I was super impressed by it. But being impressed fades and it just becomes, you know, a thing you're used to. That will happen with this as well. But right now, we're in the impressed phase. and it was something that I had never seen before. Like, literally never seen before. Because when have I ever had that many pixels in front of my eyes without some weird dimming or polarized lenses or, like, flickering thing or whatever? There is no comparison in any experience that I have ever had of seeing something with that high fidelity in stereo, and it really did feel very different than looking at a big wraparound picture. And there's just no way to express that in an ad or a YouTube video or anything like that. You have to see it yourself. And then they really cranked it up, and they were showing, like, the spatial video from the iPhone 15 Pro and spatial video from the Vision Pro. I think in that order, because the 15 Pro wasn't as good because the cameras aren't that far apart and the resolution is low and the frame rate is low. The spatial video from Vision Pro does better. And then to top it all off, they do what I think was described. The people at the Apple Store have, like, a script that they're essentially reading from the iPad. I think they actually described it as 8K. I don't know what that means in this context, but the 8K 360-degree spatial video of, like, Alicia Keys singing to you or a shark swimming up to you or a rhino. And again, there's nothing like that I've ever experienced in my entire life. It's just two really high resolution HDR images being shown to each eyeball. But if you've never experienced it, you should. And eventually you will. Don't worry. We all will. And it will become boring. And our grandchildren will think it's dumb that we're even talking about it because that's just how the world works. But right now is not that time. I urge you to go and try this if you've never tried it. All the big janky headset, the heavy thing on your face, the windows, you don't care about any of that. Just go to see a shark swim up to you in this headset. When you see a YouTube video of it, you'll be like, so what? It's a stupid video of a shark. How many videos of a shark that I've seen? When you're in the headset, it does not look like a video of a shark. It looks like you're in the water with a damn shark. And I know that sounds dumb. I know that sounds simple. But take this moment if you've never experienced this, and if you have, like, MetaQuest Pro and you experience this, you're already there. You were ahead of us. You're an early adopter. But I have never done this before. And, like, I went into this thinking, oh, I'll try it or whatever, just so I have something to talk about on the show. I did not come close to buying one of these things, but I am way closer than I was before I entered that store. Experiencing this device in real life is very persuasive. Right? Like, very persuasive. And what it makes me look, I was like, look, the stuff that I'm seeing, it's a bunch of demo stuff. There's nothing you can get like this. It's not a big deal. Like, but you immediately see, like, in the future, there will be content for this and the thing will be better and it will be lighter and the price will be lower. Like, seeing sports and stuff from, it's like, just, it is extremely compelling. And also the final thing that I'll say is, some of the things they were showing where, like, you're in a room with people, you see people playing sports or whatever. It occurred to me also that media produced like this, like a television drama or a movie or whatever, will be upsetting or compelling slash upsetting in a way that existing media is not. Probably the same way people felt when seeing something like seeing violence in a movie in, you know, color, right, is more upsetting maybe than reading about it in a book, because you viscerally feel more like you're there, like a war scene with bullets flying over and the audio and surround sound. Like, the fidelity of the experience can affect your emotions. Well, I can tell you that the fidelity of the experience of now seeing that in non-janky 3D, where it literally feels like you're there and you can look around, is it feels so much more like you are in the room, like in an upsetting way. And so if there ever is like dramatic fictional content, which I imagine there will be someday in this format, for old people like us who did not grow up experiencing this, it is going to be upsetting. Like, maybe in good ways, maybe in bad ways, but like viscerally, like imagine if there's like a play that you're watching, but you're on the stage during the play, right? And forget about stuff that's not fiction. Like if someone does like news footage from a war zone in this format, like, there should be content warnings, because it is so much more like you were actually there than looking at it on a screen. There are limitations. You can't really move the camera around that much. All sorts of stuff that would have made me motion sick. But Apple was real smart in its demos, where the camera was either locked off and did not move at all, which thumbs up for me, or it moved super duper slowly. And by the way, once the camera did move, like, they had one where it's like the camera was moving like the Apple TV screensavers, where, you know, like whatever they're flying is going super slow towards an island in Hawaii or something. The camera was moving it like really slow. If you've seen that screensaver, like, not fast at all. It moved 3 inches, and I felt like I was like had been dropped out of a helicopter, like that you know, stinking stomach feeling, or like if you've ever done the Soarin' ride at Epcot or whatever. Multiply that by like 100, and it was moving like a half a mile an hour. I can only imagine looking at like going on a roller coaster in this thing, or flying in a plane, or whatever. It was something else. And I know this is old hat for everybody who tried this WWC. Everyone has had it for a week. I used to think for 30 minutes, who cares? But all I'm going to tell you is that if you have not ever experienced HDR, high-res stereo video of literally anything, a stupid bird, someone walking back and forth in front of you, you must do this, because eventually your grandchildren will be bored of it.
Yeah, you know, just to jump in very quickly, I think it's important to reiterate, or perhaps further explain, that there's several different things that we're kind of intermingling here. You can watch a 3D movie, and I haven't watched Avatar yet. Maybe Avatar is different, but with regard to like Wakanda Forever, which is what I chose to watch, it's still a rectangle that does not take up that much of the available viewport, but there's a depth to the image you're seeing there that's fairly similar to how spatial video works. It's less rigid on the edges, but there is a viewport to what you're seeing. There's depth within the viewport, but there's still a viewport.
And I have to add, because they did, that was part of the demo, they forgot to mention, they had me watching the Mario movie, which is a computer. Mm-hmm. It's a CG movie, so it's all 3D. I felt the same way watching the Mario movie as I did watching like Avatar in the theater in 3D, only it wasn't as bright. I don't think the 3D in movies is designed with headsets in mind. In other words, I think there is less depth. Like, I know that you're talking about the viewport, but forget about the viewport. Pretend there was no viewport. Just the depth data is not realistic depth data. It is more like, I don't know if it's compressed. There's something about it that, and there's no reason on a CG thing for it not to have 100% depth data, because it's literally a computer. They know the depth of every single pixel in that scene. So it's not like they have to like pick regions like, oh, this was the live action and this is the CG. The whole thing is CG. So there's no reason for it to be like this, but it looked flat. And it wasn't just the rectangle. The rectangle didn't help, but it wasn't just the rectangle. So if you're going into this thinking you're going to, and again, I didn't see Avatar either, but if you're going in this thinking 3D movies are going to look radically different, they won't. They'll look like they do in the theater, but much brighter. But that is night and day from Alicia Keys.
Yeah, and that's the other kind of thing that happens. So there's a different mode, for lack of a better way of describing it, which is immersive, is I think the key word that they use here. And what that is you no longer have a viewport, or not in the same way I was referring to it earlier. As you move your head, you are looking around within the scene in which you're watching. So in the case of Alicia Keys, you know, I was talking to Mike over the weekend, and he described it, I think, very aptly as Alicia Keys singing at you. But that being said, it is incredible to watch. And what you are in a studio, I think in LA or something like that. And as you pan and tilt and move your head around, the image that you see is moving along with it. It is a fully immersive image, and it's as far as the eye can see. Now, there is eventually an edge to it, but it's as far as the eye can see, you know, when you first start it. And then as you look around, you can eventually get to the edge, but it's all around you. And in the Alicia Keys thing, I watched a bit of that more than the demo. You know, I watched like maybe a third of it or something like that. And as you're watching it, you can see that there's these white pieces of furniture. They're almost like obelisks. And there's five of them or something like that stationed throughout the studio. And come to realize those are the 360 cameras, because over time, and they don't show this in the demo, they switch between these different points of view. And in every one of them, you can turn your head left and right. And the sound, which you haven't mentioned yet, John, but the sound coming from these ear pods, it is not as good as AirPods Pro, at least, but it is astonishingly good. And also the surround, the faux surround, is astonishingly good, given that you've got these two ear pods that are a solid, you know, couple of centimeters away from your ears. It is very, very good. But anyway, so yeah, there are these immersive experiences. I watched the Alicia Keys one. I watched the, I think it's called Highline or something like that. It's about
the tightrope walking one.
Yep, the tightrope walking one. And then there's a dinosaur one. And I think that might have been all I saw. But they're incredible. They're just mind-shatteringly good, because it's like you are in that scene. You are there in a very different way for me, anyhow, in a very different way than spatial video. Like spatial video, you can say, oh yeah, that's about what it looked like, isn't it? That's kind of similar to what it was like. Whereas with immersive, you're friggin' there. It's absolutely unreal.
Spatial video is another example of showing limitations of the source material, because definitely on the iPhone, where it's like, I think it's like 1080p 30 frames per second or something, it's not
that much better from the Vision Pro. I think it's actually roughly the same specs.
Like, right, but the Vision Pro has spacing. The cameras farther apart. Like, yeah, the cameras are eye width apart, and I feel like that does make a difference. Or it could have also, I mean, Apple is providing this media, so I didn't, you know, whatever. Maybe they just had better lighting conditions for the, like the one I saw was the birthday one where they put the cake real close to you. Those were not nearly the experience of seeing the shark swim towards you in the water or whatever. But I saw that and I said, we need to start shooting janky iPhone 15 Pro video of my kids right now. Yes. Right. Even though it's going to be janky, it's not going to look as good as the cool stuff. But like, look, it's better. It's literally better than nothing. We have an iPhone 15 Pro. The cameras are too close together. The frame rate is too low. And still, we should shoot some of it. Not all of it. We should still take regular video at 4K and everything. But I want to have some of this. So that was convincing enough to let me know. It's like, unlike live photos and portrait mode and other stuff that Apple introduced that I have no interest in, I'm going to do this. If my kids will let me, I won't tell them I'm doing it. even though I know this is the worst version of this is ever going to be, because it is more emotionally connecting than seeing a flat photo in some cases, right? And so I want to have both. I want to have high quality flat photos. I want to have good high resolution video and audio. And I want to have some of this spatial 3D stuff. That's why I think when I look at this, like, my mind just shot forward and I'm like, this is going to be so boring to my grandkids, right? This is just going to be something that's in the world. Just like high definition television is not something my children think about at all, but I was so impressed when I saw the first high definition CRT television, like, wow, it looks like it's real. Mm-hmm. That's this moment for me. And like the sports stuff, like it's not going to replace everything in the whole world, but it's compelling enough that as soon as people see this, they're going to say, I will make a place for this in my life. Just like we've all made a place for television and the internet and computers and all the other things that we have that we don't use 24 hours a day and don't consume our entire lives, but we make a place for them because they do something that nothing has done in the same way before, or don't do it as well, right? So this, you know, showing a high resolution picture to each eye, I feel like, is the obvious next step in visual stuff. And we've been trying to do it for ages, and this is not the first VR headset. And I'm sorry if this sounds stupid for people who've been using their MetaQuest for years and years and already know all this, but this is my first experience with it. And it just so happened my first experience was with these insanely high resolution screens and a really solid, like, coherent experience.
Yeah. Marco, if it's okay with you, I'd like to briefly talk about my demo experience, and then perhaps you can take over with your general experience. Then I'd also like to talk about my train experience to wrap it up. With regard to the demo, or, well, pickup experience, I had an 8:30 appointment at the local Apple store, and our Apple store is tiny. All the people that work there are extremely nice, and I really enjoy them in the rare occasions I go in and chit-chat with them. They refer to themselves as, like, you know, the Wild West, because this is not the Fifth Avenue store, which I was in yesterday. This is not the Soho store, which I walked by yesterday. You know, this is not the Grand Central store, which you and I were in a couple of months ago. Like, this is a very tiny store. I went in at about 8, just, but it so happened that I was out anyway. And I thought, well, I'll just show up early because, you know, they never turn me away for iPhone stuff. They're not going to turn me away now. And I walk in, I say, hey, you know, I'm early, but I have an 8:30 appointment. And they said, wonderful, we'll see you at 8:30. Oh,
really?
Okay. Yes.
Never tell them the time of your appointment. Just say you have an appointment.
For whatever it's worth, like, fair, I also went to a very small, like, Long Island store to pick mine up. And my appointment was at 2 p.m. I showed up at about 8:30 because I, like, yeah. I had something to do later in the day. And so I show up. I'm like, I hope they'll take me. Like,
I don't think they even know what time your appointment is for. I think they just know your day. So you just give them your name and never tell them the time.
Well, because I showed up, and you know, because my store was also kind of the Wild West, because Long Island is the south of the north, it was empty. Like, there was, not only was there no line, there was almost no one in the store. And this was only 30 minutes after they had opened on launch day.
Actually, and building on that, it was the funniest thing. Okay, so you're going to have to cut this out for the release show. Okay. This is fine for the bootleg. Just this one little teeny part. You know how the definition of wishful thinking for a college-aged boy was a little ring in your wallet? You know what I'm talking about. It's like the definition of wishful thinking, right? So keep that in mind, and we're going to bring it back to the releasable
portion. I don't know where this is going, but I'm glad
to show. All right, so hold on. So the funniest thing about the store was as I'm walking up to it, and like you said, Marco, it was mostly empty. I mean, it was busy for 8:30 in the morning since it doesn't typically open until 10. But given that it was the launch of a brand new Apple product, it was effectively empty. And as I'm walking in, and I see off to the side, oh, that's funny. They had all the bollards or whatever you call it, you know, line management
stuff. The crowd control stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It was all still on the cart they used to bring it in and out, but it was clear they were prepared for a line that never showed up.
When I was talking with the Apple Store person who gave my demo, they offered the same exact thing because I was commenting on how many people in the store, and they said, yeah, on launch weekend, we had the line thingies set up, and we just ended up taking them down because we didn't need them.
Yep. Because we were, like you were saying, like we were planning on this to be like an iPhone launch in our minds. But, you know, you don't realize the scale of iPhone launches. And then, you know, when they're now launching this brand new thing, that's just a totally different scale product.
Yeah, people don't even know that they want it. And also they do know it's $3,500.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So
I go in, they tell me, and they're very kind about it, but they basically say, look, you're going to have to wait. So I'm chit-chatting with another person that was waiting for an 8:30 appointment. I'm chit-chatting with some of the Apple people, whatever. At 8:30, they say, okay, you know, it's demo time. And I'm like, okay. And I kind of wanted to get a marketing demo, but it seemed odd to me. Like, I've already bought the friggin' thing. Why am I doing a demo? And I think the reality of the situation, which I figured out after the fact, based on talking with a couple other people that went to other stores and my own store and just piecing everything together, I think they wanted to do the demo in part to show you like how all this works, but also to do a fit check. Yeah. And apparently, even though it didn't seem to be the case for me, and I wouldn't have elected to anyway, but apparently you could have opted out of the demo if you're really forceful about it. But they would all but force you to do a fit check, to like go off to the side, try on an example of a Vision Pro with the light shield and whatever that your app says you need. And they would take a look at it. And then if you pass the fit check, then they'll give you your device.
I think that makes perfect sense. They've got you there in person anyway. Yeah. And they don't know how well this whole face scanning thing is working for people who are doing it at home. So yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really begrudge that. I actually did exactly that. I opted out of the full demo because, you know, I knew I'd already had some time with it with the lab. I attended a lab, and then I also knew that, like, you know, I was going to get at home and just play with it all the time anyway. So I'm like, you know, I kind of knew like, okay, they're going to go through the press demo. I've heard this press demo 1,000 times. I've seen the video of the actor going through it that they posted a few days earlier. Like, I don't need to go through this again. But the staff at my store was extremely nice and extremely accommodating. And again, there was not a lot of other people there, so they had a lot of time to deal with me being weird. And so I did just the fit check. I didn't have the full walk to demo. I just did the fit check. And, you know, you go through, you do the eye setup, and you kind of just see how it feels and see how it sits on your face and everything. And I actually had them bring out a couple of different cushions, as I mentioned earlier. So I went through a process of trying a couple of different combinations of things. But they were delightful, and I was out of there probably in 20 minutes.
Speaking of fit, though, is one thing I forgot to mention. When I took the thing off at the end of the demo, there was sweat all around that thing. Like, when they did give you the in-store demos, they put kind of like a, I don't know, some kind of like one of those tissue thin things like that you would put on a public toilet seat or whatever.
Yeah.
Around the, it's a tasteful Apple one. Don't worry about it. But anyway, they put some removable stuff around the squishy face cushion thing. And I for sure sweated straight through that. I didn't think I was sweating that much. when I was in it, it didn't feel like I was sweating. And I can't judge comfort in a half an hour, though I will say that I did not really like... as someone who doesn't like AirPod Pros, as they go in my ears, I'm not a big fan of having that thing strapped to my face. Not because it's heavy, but because it presses against my face. I'm not a fan. But I also sweat way into those little thingies. I never did get motion sick. I didn't have any problem with that. But I was in an indoor, controlled environment. I wasn't overdressed, like... and I didn't even realize I was sweating until I took it off. I'm like, oh, there's some moisture evaporating on a big ring around. I felt like I should apologize to them for sweating through the thing, but I guess they'll just take it in the back, peel the thing off, and, you know. If you're going to do one of these demos, maybe go now.
Yeah. No, I asked them about, like, you know, like the logistics of, you know, how are they like, doing stuff between people and everything, and they basically just said, like, they just have this whole process they go through in the back of sanitizing everything between each person. Because, you know, it would be a little cumbersome and wasteful to have every single person get a whole new eye cushion just for sizing.
Yeah, no, they're $30 each retail.
Yeah, so exactly. So they do have, like, a set of ones that they reuse, and they just clean them somehow.
And I think the
implication was it was
them.
Fairly involved.
Yeah, it's like at the bowling alley where they spray in the shoes. Same thing.
Wow.
And then what's interesting is, like, the one they bring out for you to test the fit with, that's not the one that you walk out of the store with. So, like, they have the set of them that they test the fits with, and then they make sure your box has the right stuff in it and send you home with that box.
Yeah, which, actually, that's the perfect segue, because when it eventually becomes my turn at 8:30 or 8:35 or whatever, I go to what is effectively it's not literally a Genius Bar table, but very, very similar. We didn't have any of the sweet couches that, like, Fifth Avenue in Soho got.
We didn't have those either. I asked the Apple person about it. They're like, no, we didn't get this.
Exactly. So I go and I sit, and there's somebody there with, I think it was an iPad mini, which is what John was talking about, which is, you know, going to mirror what's going on the Vision Pro that I'm using. And I explained to them, oh, look, you know, I've done the lab experience, and I can't tell you anything about it, but I can tell you enough that, you know, I can do the eye tracking. You don't need to tell me about all that. Can I just do, like, the video related portions of the demo? You know, the get me through. I don't need the window management stuff. Just give me the good stuff. And the dude was totally chill. He's like, yeah, absolutely. No worries. It took something like half an hour for me to get my bespoke Vision Pro to try. And this isn't the one I bought, but to try. And it does come on a delightful little platter, which is very, very cool and looks neat. But they bring it out. It took forever for them to get me mine. And I think, reading between the lines, based on what I overheard and what I was able to glean from the Apple employee, it seemed like our particular store only had a couple, I'm filling in some blanks here, but only had a couple of light seals in each size, or in the light seal and the cushion or whatever in each size. And it seems like every damn person that was doing a demo at 8:30 or 8:30-ish at, you know, the store I was in, all wanted the same one.
Like, and size 11 men's shoes, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so what ended up happening was there was effectively a queue just to get a light shield or whatever the heck it's called. I always get it wrong, but to get the shield or in cushion that I needed, because everyone else was using it at the same time. They were starting to get, not with me at all, they were super chill with me, but they were starting to get pretty frustrated about the fact that it was taking so long. And it did. And it was not a delightful experience. Like, the store people made it as great as they could, but it was not great. Anyway, so I do my demo, and then I, you know, go and I ask for, you know, I say, okay, I'm ready to pick up my device. And then it took like a solid 20, 30 minutes for that to get put together. And I didn't realize at the time, and Marco, I think you said so just a moment ago, but what they're doing is they're filling this gigantic box with the particular components that you need, and then they're sealing it in the back of the store. So yes. The good news is, you know, they're not making you, like, unbox it and do a fit check with the one that you bought. You know, they're doing this all with fresh stuff in the back, like you had said, Marco, but it took for freaking ever. I walked into that Apple store at 8, and I think I walked out at 10 or something like that. It was bananas how long it took.
Yeah, and some keep of that in is mind, too, like, you know, this was day one, the morning.
Immediately,
like,
at the beginning.
And like, the retail logistics of this are so complicated. And again, like you mentioned, like, the people are the retail staff largely at Apple stores is delightful. Like, they hire very well, they train very well. It really shows. Like, the people in Apple stores are always the nicest people, and you could tell, like, they are that first day, you could tell they were, like, a little bit running around with their heads cut off, because it was just there was so much, you know, new logistical stuff to deal with.
Yep.
Yeah, I noticed when they were going through the thing, I was on the third day, and they were still, like, going through the script, you know, learning the parts of it. Like, they hadn't done this a lot. And I was shocked when I went there. I went there at 10:30 on a Monday, I think it was. And I'm like, what are all these people doing in the Apple store? Don't these people have jobs? Because I thought I'd be the only one in the store. Who the heck is going to the Apple store at 10:30 on a weekday, right? But they were doing like 6 Vision Pro demos at the same time. So they might not have got the couches, but they apparently got enough Vision Pros to run a lot. That's all there was in the store, was just like one sad person who had a broken computer and then just a phone or whatever. And then just Vision Pro demos as far as the eye could see. And speaking of the little tray, like, you know, the little, you know, there's a special tray, of course, there has to be, that exactly fits the Vision Pro that they bring it out to you on or whatever. I'm told, but I think someone said this on Mastodon, that if you are at one of the fancy stores that has the new, like, colorful benches that you sit on for Vision Pro, that there's, like, a little, like, a nightstand or a little, like, a desk arm thing, like, a place where they put the tray when they bring it out to you, because you're not at a table, you're sitting on kind of a bench. There's a place where they put the Vision Pro on the tray, and according to this person, the tray has magnets in it, and there are magnets in the place where you put it, so it will always be exactly correctly centered and aligned on the thing that they put the tray down on.
That's unreal.
Really important that you're during your. I mean, the only thing I can think of is maybe they don't want you accidentally knocking the tray off or something. But yeah, they're thinking everything over there.
Do you think Apple might be the world's leading consumer of magnets?
Would be.
I don't know. Are they recycled magnets?
I don't know. Well, I mean, probably they're just iron, but
they're not just iron.
Oh yeah, right. All the rare. Yeah,
they're all the rare earth magnets. Yeah.
Now they're. Yeah. What's interesting magnets. Too, like speaking of magnets, before I forget, this one little nitpick that. The Vision Pro hardware design has the light shield and then the pad on the front of the light shield, both attaching to each other and then the headset via magnets. The way you would naturally pick up this device,
yeah.
I think in many cases, you would pick it up by the light seal. And mm-hmm. So Apple clearly knows this because they tell you so many times the correct way to pick it up with, like, 2 fingers. What, you basically pick it up by like the nose bridge and the top center of the actual.
You pick it up by the aluminum part.
Yes, and they and you can tell because like one time I did accidentally pick it up a little bit by the light seal and it just popped right off. I'm like, oh
yeah, I think
so
they calibrated it to the magnets to be weaker.
Yeah.
So that you don't, literally can't pick it up by the light, because if they're like, oh, they should just make the magnets tighter. That's just asking for an accident. I think
But the problem is you can pick it up by the light seal and then it will fall down. Like so.
Really? Yes. The thing was so loose that I felt like you couldn't even lift it up from it. Those magnets are not strong. Maybe they need to make them even looser because it's not like that. Like it's under compression when it's on your face. So it's not like it really needs much to just be positively aligned. But they need to make it so loose that it is literally impossible for you to pick it up by that because it is going to come off.
No, I think they need to have it just attached via latches. Like there has to, you know, have a release button somewhere. Like have it be mechanically attached. Have both pieces,
yeah, version
not
two,
magnetic, because it like the number of people who are going to drop and break their Vision Pros because of that, I think, is going to be substantial. And that's just a bad design. Like that should really be more physically secure.
I mean, maybe people will pick it up by the strap. I mean, you can pick it up by the strap, I guess.
Yeah, but yeah, trust me, there's going to be a lot of broken Vision Pros because people pick it up by the light seal. I guarantee it.
All right, so that was my in-store experience. Like, it was not stupendous, but like Marco had said, you know, it's the beginning. It was the early in the day. You know, I was set up for failure, you know, head to toe, top to bottom. But and that's okay. I did get to, you know, use it a bit over the weekend. I did some demos for friends and that mostly went okay. But most of my exposure to the Vision Pro, because I've had such a busy weekend and then a few days when I was in New York, a lot of my exposure was over the last couple of evenings before bed and on the train. But I'd like to save that until after. Marco, how was your, you've mostly covered your pickup experience, but what have you been doing over the last few days with this thing?
So I want to start just with like the eye, can, you know, eye setup. You know, how does it look? How, you know, what's the physical reality of this? So again, with the disclaimer that I do have prescribed need for reading glasses for things that I hold close to my face. You know, maybe a distance of, you know, it's less than my arm distance, but it's not that much less than my arm distance. And it's a minor. It's like a 0.75 reader prescription for that distance. So it's a fairly minor and light reading prescription. So that being said, the Vision Pro, I cannot really get it to look very sharp most of the time. And I've heard a couple of other people say this or say similar things, so I think it's not just me. Somewhat it might just be like the limits of the displays, of just they're not.
Which parts, when you say not sharp, like give me an example, I see that and it doesn't look sharp to me.
So Where I notice it most is actually in the immersive video content. And so I'm not sure if it's the limitation of the resolution of the content or if it's the device, but also, like, I've had similar issues with the Quest headsets when I've tried them. And so the main issue is, like, stuff in the center of the screen is fairly sharp. As I look at things more towards the edges of my field of view, it's less sharp, and there's also a lot more, like, color fringing that I see along the periphery of the view. And again, so I don't know how much of that is the optics that everyone sees,
or
how much
of that is just my eyes. Is this with or without the lenses in it?
So I've tried it both ways. So I got the Zeiss reader inserts that are for that range, the 0.75 to 1.25, I think. So I got those, and I've used it about half the time with those and about half the time without those. And every time I swap them, I go and recalibrate everything and go through all that just to make sure I'm giving it the best possible chance. I've tried both straps. I've spent a good amount of time with both, honestly. Different strap, you know, arrangements, different tightness levels. I've tried both the regular cushion, and in the box they give you a regular depth cushion and like an extra deep. It's like the W plus or the N plus cushion. And the Vision Pro once yelled at me that my eyes were too close. Once I inserted the reader lenses, it said my eyes are now too close. I think my glorious eyelashes might have been hitting the glass. And so it says you should really use the W plus cushion. So I switched to that. So I've tried a lot of different combinations, and I've done as much like recalibration and adjustment and everything as I possibly can. And it's hard for me to get everything to look sharp, but it's close enough now that like the native UI elements, the windows, the text, like that kind of stuff looks sharp enough. Like that, it looks pretty sharp. Where I have issues is again the periphery of the view and a lot of the like immersive video content. That's a little bit tricky for me.
Speaking of sharpness and the video content, one of the things that I did when they were showing one of the first quote-unquote 8K whatever immersive videos is I looked all the way to my left to see essentially where the horseshoe of the viewport ends. Like if you can imagine like a billboard in front of you wrapped around you in a U-shape, you can, if you look all the way to the left, find where the edge of that billboard is. Like, and same thing if you look down in front of you, you can see where it essentially intersects with the desk that's in front of you or whatever. Anyway, I made it a point of looking at those intersections, and I think two things were working for me here. One, the pass-through is another example of this device being limited by the source material, because the pass-through cameras are not up to the resolution of these displays. Like, it looks kind of potato-y. I think it's just because the cameras aren't good enough, right? So whatever, fine. It's more important for it to be in sync as it is. But then when I looked at the edge of the big wraparound billboard, the edge of that billboard of whatever Alicia Keys' room or whatever the thing was in was so razor sharp. I must have stared at it for an amount of time that the demo person must have been like, why is this person looking? Don't they realize the action is happening in front of them? I looked at the like rounded corner and razor sharp edge of this giant billboard that was wrapping around me. I'm like, how can that be so sharp? And I'm looking for chromatic aberration, right? I'm looking for the things you're talking about. It was so razor sharp, and it may just be because the background was the pass-through was potato-y and dim, whereas Alicia Keys was being fed from a file that's on the device and did not have to deal with go through the camera. But it looked so sharp, so like I cut myself on it. I was like, I cannot believe the resolution of this thing. On the other hand, when I was scrolling Safari, I'm like, this text is, you know, this text could be better. Like my XDR looks, Safari looks better on my XDR, but whatever the hell they're doing with that HDR video and the edge treatment of that thing, thumbs up. So I guess whatever sharpness problems you were having, because if you think about periphery, I'm turning my head, but I'm also turning my eyes, mostly because I was kind of embarrassed to be looking literally to my left when Alicia Keys is in front of me or whatever. I think I was looking at the edge of the tiny screen while also looking at the edge of that thing, and sharpness absolutely did not suffer. And also I never noticed the foveated rendering. I also never noticed, which obviously was happening every time I look anywhere, but I was never able to catch it. Some people said they've been able to catch it, but maybe I was just too wowed, but I never caught it like following my focus and rendering. You know what I mean?
I mean, so on some level I am kind of relieved to hear that it's not a problem inherent to the hardware. On another level, this sucks because I can't get it to look as good as it's looking.
I mean, people have said that they've seen chromatic aberration, and people who have like analyzed it like by machine and not vision. It could just be my vision is too crappy to notice it, but I stared at it for a while.
Like, you couldn't not.
Maybe it's because my regular vision is not as sharp as yours, right? And it's just it passes the bar for me or whatever. But people have like. there's a tremendous amount of processing going on with that image that these people who are like analyzing it, but like shoving like a camera up to the thing and fooling it into running, you can see all the tricks that it's doing. But whatever tricks it was doing, those tricks worked on me.
Well, I'm glad. I hope at some point there's a version of this that I can see very sharply, as sharply as you seem to be seeing it. Because again, like the rest of my eyesight is, as far as I know, perfect. Like, you know, I'm 20/20 for everything else. Just like, you know, I'm 41. I need reading glasses for things up close now. That's it. So I don't know what it is, but I've had the same problem with the Quest headsets I've tried, and I Oh, well, we'll move on because, you know, this sounds like it's just a me problem, which, again, is
frustrating. Does it get worse over time?
No.
Like, if you're in it for an hour?
No, it stays exactly the same the whole time, from beginning to end. Anyway, so, otherwise, like, you know, comfort and fit-wise, otherwise, I have not any real problems with it. I haven't used it for, like, a whole movie yet. I haven't had time to, like, watch an entire movie from, you know, beginning to end. So maybe after a long time, I might start to feel the weight. But so far, for me, comfort-wise, it's fine. I would love it to be lighter, of course, like everyone else, but I can deal with it. I've tried both straps, the little two-strap version and the big fancy singular solar strap. They're both totally fine for me in different ways. Neither one of them seems to have any major problems on me, so that's good. I mean, it's probably, you know, I have neither hair nor makeup, so that helps, I think, with all the strap issues. But otherwise, like, that's been fine. So moving on to the TV and movies a little bit, you know, as I was just saying, like, it was actually fairly difficult for me to watch what you're describing, like, the 3D immersive videos that have, like, the 180-degree field of view. Because two reasons I think I've had trouble with them. So I watched Alicia Keys, I watched The Highline, I think there was one more that I watched. So, the dinosaur one with like those weird like bird dinosaur things in the sand. The problem, I have two issues with these. Number one is that what they're shooting looks like a 3D scene that you are freely in and can look around because it's the 180-degree field of view. But it was still shot with cinematic cameras in a cinematic style. And what that means is there is shallow depth of field very frequently because that's how things are shot on video. And that's partly optics. It's partly a creative choice. But there are certain things in the video that the filmmaker chose to make in focus in each scene and certain things that they didn't. But if you're looking at a scene that takes up your entire field of view and that you feel immersed in, I kind of feel like I should be able to look around the scene. And look at anything, and what I'm looking at should be naturally in focus the way it would be if I was there looking at it.
I meant to mention that a lot of the most convincing 3D ones I've seen, and I also think their environments benefit from essentially having a really narrow aperture in camera thing where the depth of field is huge, which what that means is that things are in focus 1 foot from you, 2 feet, 5 feet, 10 feet, all in focus because the aperture on the camera is very narrow and the only light, rays of light that go in it are the ones that are sort of collinear. But anyway, like, that works best for exactly that reason, because unless it's not clear, where it tracks where you look, but as we've discussed at length in the past, the focal distance is always the same, and yeah, it knows where you're looking, but it does not currently change the focus. Like, you could have like a light field video or something that could change the focus or something, but that's not how this works, right? So when you're looking at the video, you look at that blurry part, it is never going to not be blurry. It's blurry in the video. It's a H.265 compressed file. It's playing for each of your eyes, and that video you're looking at, you can look at it all you want. It's going to be exactly as blurry as it is in that encoded video file. And the environments, like by the lakeside type thing, I think part of the reason they look so amazing is they've somehow taking it so that like everything is in focus.
Those the dirt environments on your feet is are rendered; they're not video.
Yeah, there you go.
That's why. That's like our friend Steve Tron Smith like found like it's all they're all like you know I think they're like you know reality 3D whatever scenes. Like,
yeah.
So the reason why the environments look so good if you think about it for a second, it makes sense. In those environments, you can shift your head around a little bit to like you know you can shift your head left, right, in, out, and the environment, the view of the environment. You can like kind of look around the edge of the rock that you're next to or whatever.
Which can't do in recorded 2D video.
Right. So it kind of has to be a 3D rendered environment or have some other kind of
or some other kind of composite. I don't actually know how they're doing it.
Yeah, but whatever it is, like the environments that you can like you know set as your background, those seem to be just 3D renders of very high quality. You know, so maybe they captured it with some really good cameras and then modeled it after. Who knows? But those are renders, not videos. When I'm actually watching videos, I find that I have this problem a lot, where like what I'm focusing on is not what they focused on, and it kind of breaks the illusion for me and makes me feel like I almost like feel like I'm getting eye strain trying to watch it.
Yeah, maybe that's also one of the problems with like the Mario movie, because it's a similar type of thing. There's like shallow depth of field in a particular shot or whatever, and it looks 3D-ish, but it's the same thing when, you know, if you watch any 3D movie in the theater, it's exactly the same problem. If you decide that what you're interested in is something that is not in focus, it will never be in focus because it is just one flat video, and you know there are technologies that allow you to focus on different parts, like the light field camera things that have like a million lenses and you take one photograph with it, yeah. You can put different areas in focus. And this is not portrait mode where it just blurs crap. It's different than that. It gathers the light information for all those different depths of field. And if you combine that technology with a technology that is not in the Vision Pro, but that Facebook has done a lot of research into, which is, hey, when we know where they're looking, change the focal distance, you could achieve what we're, you know, what our great-grandchildren will get, which is wherever I look, when I refocus my eyeballs, I can see the blurry things like that. That is technologically within our reach, but it would cost, you know, $20,000 and still kind of be janky. So Apple kind of hit the sweet spot here, where it's like fixed focal distance. The stuff that looks best is the stuff that's in focus and everywhere. And if you look at something that's not like that, it'll be like watching, you know, Avatar in the movie theater, where, yeah, some things are going to be out of focus. Don't spend time staring at them.
Yeah. And so for whatever it's worth, so like a 3D movie like Avatar, like that kind of like, so I had, before I had watched it in the Vision Pro, I had never seen a 3D movie ever anywhere, not in a theater, not on some weird TV from CES 15 years ago, like never. So I was looking through like, you know, what's available, and it turns out the three most recent Star Wars trilogy movies, Episode 7, 8, and 9, those are all available in 3D. I know. I like them. Hey, it's just, I don't want to hear it. I like them. I like all three of them, and screw you. Anyways,
well, no, I'm saying no, that's not what I'm groaning about. I love the first two. The third one is bad. But anyway, it's because it's the 3D, right? So here's the thing: CG movies, like I said, could in theory have perfect 3D because it's literally a 3D scene in a computer and it knows the depth of every single pixel. But for live action movies that are quote unquote shot in 3D, especially older ones, they would not cheat, but like, yeah, they use a stereoscopic camera for this, but the background plate is flat, and they could end up having that kind of like effect that you get in what is it called, the Disney animation thing where you have multiple multi-plane stuff where like the background is far away, then there's another layer, then there's the foreground, which
parallax.
Is in, quote unquote, yeah, parallax, right? And so it can sometimes look like you're looking at a diorama, like some 3D things on top of a 2D plane that's behind a 2D plane. Again, the Mario movie, I don't know why it looked like that. That must have been a choice they made to sort of flatten out the 3D and to make it look more like a, you know, a bunch of parallax 2D animation. But especially older 3D movies, I don't know if it's the Star Wars movies in particular, because I haven't seen them in 3D, but especially older 3D movies that are from sort of the dawn of 3D, that are not Avatar caliber and not all CG, can look a little bit like you're looking at a toy box with a bunch of paper cutouts that are stacked in front of each other, which is cool, but it is not the full 3D experience. But anyway, you think the Star Wars movies didn't look like that to you?
So I only watched like, you know, a few minutes of Force Awakens. I didn't have time to watch the whole thing, but I was pretty impressed by how it looked. I had heard that complaint about 3D movies in general. I didn't know if it has that problem, it wasn't enough for me to notice it. But again, this was only over a few minutes. But I will say, my experience of watching the 3D Star Wars movie in the regular, like, you know, movie rectangle that's floating in a fixed space, that optically speaking, that was way better for me than the fully immersive 180 degree video views. I didn't have the sharpness problems that I have with the 180 degree videos. I didn't have as much, like, you know, weird issues with me focusing on things that were actually soft in the video. Like, I didn't have any of those issues when I was watching 3D Star Wars. So I think, for me personally, this is a much more compelling device for movies, like for regular movies or 3D regular movies, rather than the filmed immersive video. But that being said, what I like better than both of those is the rendered environments that you can sit in, you know, and have your podcast playing in, or watch, or, you know, put in your notes document or whatever. I love those environments, and I really hope Apple continues to add more of those on a regular basis. I would absolutely love more of those.
When I came out of that store, I said, National Geographic should be selling packs of these for $25. They will make a bazillion dollars. Like, just the environments. Like, because this is a consumable. You're wondering what the beer drinking app is for the Vision Pro? It's this. Those environments. And again, if you're thinking like, what is it? It's just like you're looking at a big picture of mountains around you. No, that is not what it's like. I cannot tell you how much that is not what it's like, right? and if they sold packs of those, I would be throwing, you know, $5 for one, $10 for one, like, oh, and what is the cost of this? Some fancy camera equipment or 3D, you know, thing, like there is, you know, making one of these good is probably costly, but a good 3D artist can probably do it. And oh boy, I would spend so much money on those because they are so compelling to just sit there. And you're like, so what do? Like, you just turn it on and then you're there. Like, yeah, that's it. That's literally it.
Well, you can, that can be it. You can just sit there, or
and you can do everything else.
Open up
with
windows and work there. Like,
yeah.
You know, and then it's like you're working on a mountain or whatever. Like, that's, you can totally, and yeah, though I am with you. That is possibly my favorite thing to do on Vision Pro, is just go to those environments and just hang out or do something simple. Like, that I think is a huge market for Vision Pro, is kind of just transport me to a nice place and make it seem as realistic as possible. I don't need there to be a story happening around me. Just bring me somewhere nice. Like, kind of like, you know, a virtual vacation or virtual tourism. Or any, just even just, again, like almost like a, you know, meditative spaces could also be useful here. There are so many great applications of that. And that is extremely compelling when you're in the Vision Pro. That by far my favorite immersive type of experience.
And the little dial that fades it in, they do that in a smart way, so there's kind of like a semicircular cutout in front of you. Like, so I've seen a lot of people online who basically like, oh, I pick my favorite immersive environment, right? And I dial the little dial so that I can still see everything on the desk in front of me. So like, there's a little semicircle in front of them where their desk is visible and pass through where they see whatever it is they have in front of them. And then the immersive environment appears, and they basically dial it in so they can interact with the stuff that they need to interact with. But everything else is, you know, the moon or like, you know, whatever that lake is at the side of the mountains. I even saw some person who was using it on a rowing machine, and they wanted to be able to see like the, I don't know, some stats or screen that's on their fancy rowing machine, but also feel like they're on like a mountain lake type thing or whatever. Again, I wouldn't recommend wearing this for exercise. That was the point of this video, is like, can you use it for exercise? But the way they've implemented immersive environments and the way they allow you to dial it in is not just like, how much do you want? It is literally dial it so that you can do all the things in the real world with your real hands on your real physical surfaces that are in front of you, while also getting to experience the immersive environment. And then, by the way, when you dial it all the way to like 100%, you have arms and you have hands, but you do not have a body or feet or legs. So just be prepared for that. When you look straight down, you will see the dirt below you. You will not see anything, but you will see your flickery, very poorly masked arms and hands. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. So anyway, also, by the way, another very useful benefit of that kind of like partial environment view, as you were saying, like the oval in front of you is environment. That's very useful if, for instance, you're in a place physically where whatever is immediately in front of you might be distracting or prevent windows from showing up correctly. So if you're trying to get work done with some windows in the space and there's, say, an airline seat directly in front of your face, or maybe a very distracting or busy background, you will often want to dial that in partially just to have something that you can, like a solid or solid-ish background that you can do work against. So it's also very useful for that. So anyway, love the environment. Please expand the environments.
Remember our question from back then? It's like, well, what are you going to do with an airline seat when the airline seat is 2 inches from your nose, but you want the movie screen to be 10 feet away from you? The answer in Vision Pro is they just draw it 10 feet away from you. And you would think that the sort of disconnect of like, but that's impossible or whatever, it does look weird sometimes, but usually because they dim the background so much and because the Vision Pro content is so much more compelling in HDR, like I did it with the semicircular thing. The semicircular thing was 3 feet past the Apple person who was sitting next to me, but it was drawing over them, right? It's like a Z index problem, like in a video game. And it's like, well, wait a second. If it's 5 feet past them, how can it be drawing in front of them? And the answer is your brain just eventually accepts it because you look at the shiny, bright pixels, right? If you look at the edge, it doesn't make any sense, but... So, you know, the answer to, like, if you're watching a movie on a seat back in front of you and the screen's going to be 2 seats up, it's just going to draw over the seats.
Yeah, and it will look like you're looking through the seats and they're not even there. And here's,
yeah, and,
here's
and
window.
If you look at the edge, it'll be like, this doesn't make any sense. How is it cut off or whatever? But, like, because you know it's all fake and it's a screen, it mostly works. I don't know what else they could do. I didn't know what they were going to do. I didn't know if they were going to try to, like, forbid it or try to whatever. And the answer is they just draw over it. Like, and it mostly works out.
So... let's talk productivity. This is not going to be a productivity device for most people. Text input is terrible.
Okay. See, I was wondering where you were going with that because
it will probably always be terrible.
I don't know if I agree about the productivity in a broad sense, but yes, could not agree more. It is infuriating how bad text entry is.
Yeah, you're talking about without a physical keyboard, obviously.
Correct.
Yes. And you know, and I think that is fair because many times, I mean, look, I have a physical keyboard. I have a Bluetooth keyboard I bought just for this. I don't always have it with me. And there's lots of times when, like, you will need to enter text on the Vision Pro directly through for some reason, whether you don't have the keyboard or it's not right there or it's not working, whatever. Text input is very bad. Now, some of this can be tweaked a little bit here and there, but I think a lot of it is just inherent to the physical realities of what you're doing. So this is never going to be, I think, as good of a text input platform as, say, a Mac or even an iPad with a keyboard, because what you don't realize with text
input... Or a phone.
Text input is not just typing. It's also things like moving the cursor, selecting things, moving text, cut, copy, paste, all that's, you know, all the different stuff that you do with the text as you're working with it. So combination of typing and all of that other stuff. And in the Vision environment, it is rough. Even with a keyboard makes it a lot better, but it still doesn't make it good because all of that manipulation stuff is still all pretty rough. This is going to be a problem for a lot of people.
And by the way, I mentioned that you have arms and you have hands. One thing you don't have is a keyboard because it does not even attempt to mask it out. So if you dial that environment in, so it's taking up where your keyboard would be, you'll see your hands. You won't see your keyboard.
Yeah. one other kind of inherent problem that I've had so far, and I think some of this will get better over time and some of it won't, is that the eye tracking and gesture-based system, in my experience, and a number of viewers have mentioned this, it is not super reliable. Like, it works well enough in the sense that, like, most of the taps that you do and most of the places you look with your eyes will be correct. But there's a very huge difference between most and all. And, you know, when you are operating precise PC and Mac input devices, keyboards, mice, trackpads, like, they're all pretty precise, and they're all extremely reliable. Butterfly keyboard accepted, but, you know, we're past that era now, thank God. So they're all extremely – and that's part of the reason why the butterfly keyboard was so infuriating was that even if it would make an error, like, you know, 0.1% of the time, it turns out you type keys a lot, and so that would add up, and it would actually be very annoying or very, you know, destructive to your workflow if you had even that tiny of an error rate. The Vision Pro is trying to read all these kind of real-world squishy analog inputs that you're doing with your hands and where you're looking with your eyes and trying to create a very reliable input method from that. And they've done a really good job with what they can do, but the physical reality of that is that that's never going to be as precise and as reliable as the other input devices that we're accustomed to in the PC world. So I have found personally, some of this I think is habits that I can improve as I learn to use the device better. For instance, John, you mentioned this earlier that, like, you know, it, like, when I look at an eye target in Vision OS, I will look at it and I will begin to do the tap gesture with my fingers. And as I'm doing that, I am moving my eyes to the next thing. Yeah. And then I click the wrong thing because by the time my fingers actually reach each other, my eyes have actually moved slightly over, you know, on the way to the next thing I'm doing. And you know, I haven't realized it because it's just like subconscious. Like, I think, look, click, move, you know. And it takes a while, and, you know, everyone's reporting this, I think, it takes a while for you to realize as the user, like, wait, no, my eyes are the pointer, and therefore I have to keep looking at this thing until the tap is registered. Then I can move my eyes. And that is very different from any other computing device we've ever used. So that both slows me down, and combined with the squishy analog factors, it increases my error rate. So I'm frequently clicking the wrong thing.
It's not just the fact
that
you have to keep looking at it. Like, remember those heat map things where they're like, let's see where people are looking on this web page so we can optimize it or whatever. Mm-hmm. One thing is that you'll realize that I realized when I was doing, like, menu selections, it's not just that I have to remember to keep looking at the thing. One thing that apparently I do, and I imagine other people do, is, hey, when a menu pops up with a bunch of different choices, even though I know the one I want is whatever, I scan them all. And even when I'm about to select the one, like, I would see my selection going up, down, up, down, up. And it's because I realize I'm looking at what all the choices are. If I was doing this on the Mac, the menu would come up, and what would happen is my cursor would make a beeline for the one that I want to click while my eyes scanned all the other options, especially if it's an app that I've never used, right? And in Vision Pro, that is not helpful because your selection in the menu of seven items is going top, bottom, top, bottom, top, bottom. And you're like, but no, and it's like, you don't realize that your eyes essentially scan things to, like, you know, let me, especially again, using an app for the first time, what are all the options while I'm going, because I said, now go into that menu and select the whatever. And I'm going and I'm selecting, but I'm also scanning them all. And it's like conflict because your eyes are for scanning, but now your eyes are also are also the pointer. And they can't be both at once.
Yeah, and that, along with a few other like, you know, just physical and design considerations, that I think is the biggest hindrance to me so far whenever I've tried to do productivity work with this, whether it's just basic email or notes or even Safari, YouTube, like all this other stuff. There's so much stuff where I'm kind of trying to bounce between different windows or do something in an app, and that eye tracking mechanic gets in my way and creates a lot of error. So first of all, I can strongly encourage developers out there, as you design for Vision OS, undo. Please support undo. It is very important, because I think this is, especially as people are new to it, I think it's going to have pretty high error rates of input. But, you know, more generally with productivity tasks too. So, you know, so you have pretty rough text input. You have kind of coarse-grained and kind of not great reliability on pointer input. That hurts it in some areas. What I think also hurts it is, you know, kind of accounting for that and accounting for the space you're in. The controls and the layouts in Vision OS for productivity apps, everything has to be very chunky and fairly low information density. And this is, I think, why I'll get to the Mac screen sharing in a minute, but the low information density, that I think, it feels a lot like I'm using apps on my Apple TV, but with, you know, more advanced input and larger screen space. I wouldn't want to do certain kinds of work this way. You know, again, what we're accustomed to in the PC and Mac world is high resolution, highly precise, highly reliable inputs and outputs. And that's not what we have here. We have a lot of other advantages here, but those aren't among them. And so the design of the apps that we use has to be totally different on Vision OS. And there's different designs that feel and work better or worse than others. And what we are accustomed to with most productivity apps in the PC platforms is, again, like very, very dense things made for very precise, you know, mouse pointers and stuff. And that just doesn't work in Vision OS. Everything in Vision OS has to be very similar to like a very blown up iPad design that, you know, for instance, one of the questions I had early on with like all of our friends who got press time was, I asked them all in June, like, hey, how is scrolling, especially vertical scrolling? Because so much of app design in the modern world based on phones is based on lots of vertical scrolling. And I had suspected that it might be clumsy on Vision Pro. And now that I've been using Vision Pro, I can tell you for sure it works. But yeah, it is clumsy. Like, you don't want to be involved. Like, you're not going to want to like be browsing a social feed by vertical scrolling constantly on a Vision Pro. It's tedious, and it's not nearly as nice or direct or reliable as doing it on a phone screen. So,
yeah, I mentioned that in my blog post, which I wrote the blog post obviously before I'd ever used Vision Pro, and also before I'd read any reviews or seen any review videos and stuff. And so I intentionally tempered what I said to not be too sensational or adamant, but in my heart, I knew everything that Marco was saying. I'm like, this is totally how it's going to be. But I'm like, hey, you haven't tried it. Don't come out and say it's definitely going to be this way. You don't know. So if you look at what I wrote, like in the last few paragraphs and the things that I say them in a nice way. But what I'm trying to say is, like, this is not going to be like flicking. I think I did. They make the comparison, flicking your thumb on your phone to scroll. And I gave myself a hedge, but I said, this is also not going to be like 1984 and I grab my mouse and I grab a menu, right? Because the directness of that connection, even though it's not direct, you're on a mouse, the mouse is on a mouse pad and the cursor's on your screen, it's sort of mechanically close enough that within 5 minutes, my 8-year-old mind, I was grabbing the file menu with my hand, right? And as I try to explain without going on too much in my old man mode, grabbing things with your hand is something we learn to do from birth because it's important to live our lives and feed ourselves and navigate the world. Seeing something and grabbing it with your hand, we're all really good at that because we have to be, because we have bodies and we live in a world. And to the extent a computer interface can take advantage of that, it's awesome and it feels efficient. The phone, even better. We see the thing we want and we touch it with our stupid meat fingers. Flick scrolling with your thumb on the phone, just such a beautiful combination of real spatial computing. We already know how to do all that stuff with our hands. They make the images on the screen pretend like they have inertia and it makes sense to our little monkey brains, right? and it is just so satisfying. And pinch scrolling in VisionOS is not that. And same thing with the resizing, that you have to look, like that you can't just grab the window. We're real good at reaching out and grabbing the corner of the window and yanking it, but that's not how VisionOS works. It might someday, but today it does not. And so it kind of reminds me of, like, very often when I use my phone or my iPad, if I have to do something complicated with my computer, I feel like I'm using my computer with mittens. Like, oh, I just need to get to my Mac. Even if it's just like to get arrow keys and to be able to, you know, just text manipulation. And I got to have three browser windows and I have a file that I want to save this and I want to convert it to this and I want to put it into this document and I want to put it in this folder on my website. And like, it's just so much easier to do it on the Mac because I feel like my hands are in there in the Mac with like these high fidelity interfaces of the keyboard and the mouse. And you'd be like, that's not direct manipulation. You're using a thing down there and your screen's up there. It is so much more direct than the quote unquote spatial computing of the Vision Pro, because the Vision Pro does not ask us to manipulate things with our hands the way we manipulate a keyboard and a mouse. Now, yeah, you can use a keyboard and a mouse with Vision Pro, and as I said in my article, it could be that the full solution is really, hey, this screen tech combined with plain old boring a keyboard and mouse. But trying to use the Vision Pro without a keyboard, without a mouse, without a pointer, just using your fingers gesturing in space where they never ask you to grab anything. And by the way, if you were to grab it, it wouldn't be there because it's not real, unlike the mouse and keyboard, which you can feel. It is so much less efficient, less direct, and less quote unquote spatial than moving windows around on your Mac with a trackpad or a mouse. It doesn't mean that it's bad, and the screen, obviously, as I said in the post, the Vision Pro can do things that the Mac absolutely cannot. But being really efficient for doing like text editing or moving files around or even just resizing or moving windows, which you know I love to do, the Vision Pro has a long way to go there. It doesn't mean that it's bad or doomed or whatever, but I do kind of feel like your impression, Marco, of obviously you use it way longer than I have, and I'm glad to hear, like, that's what I imagined it would be like if I had one of these in my house and had to use it for an hour. I felt like I would feel like what you just described. And I mean, I use it for 30 minutes. Again, I don't want to come down too strongly on it. I was mostly wowed by the visuals, but like if trying to do stuff on my phone or my iPad is like wearing mittens, trying to do stuff in Vision Pro is kind of like wearing a straitjacket or with one arm tied behind your back, or maybe sending messages to someone and asking them to do it.
Wow.
Like, it's amazing that it works at all, but I cannot imagine trying to do any of my computer stuff in that environment. That's before even getting to the stuff that you were talking about with information density, because again, I didn't have enough experience to know if that's like just Apple's apps or if it's, you know, like it's whatever. But like, even setting that aside, just, I don't feel like my hands are in there doing stuff in the same way that I do on the, and even on like the iPad and the phone, like that's as direct as you can get. I see stuff, I push my finger on it, I move my finger, like that becomes so second nature and feels so efficient right up until we have to do anything involving text editing, which again is a separate issue. But like the way you mentioned text editing, I feel like that on the software keyboards on the phone and the iPad, and I can actually touch those, unlike the one in VisionOS, which you can't actually touch because it's not there.
Yeah, it and on the, you know, on the spatial design front too, you know, everything optically, as we've discussed both earlier this episode and also in previous episodes, it's all kind of optimized for that like 1.3 meters away from you focal distance, and the whole system is designed around that, of course, because if you have a lot of stuff that's much closer than that, you do risk getting eye strain from VAC, again, as we've discussed. So if you think about it, like, you're using all of these apps at, you know, at greater than arm's distance away. And so the design of them is very big and chunky also. And you are limited, you know, when you're having things be that far away naturally. And again, if you put everything closer to you, you're also not only risking eye strain, but like the displays aren't actually high resolution enough to make that look very good a lot of times. Anyway, so you're going to be operating mostly like at that distance. Things are going to be placed at that radius around you by default, and you're going to be operating mostly that distance. Well, with the information density of the apps, even if you set them to their smallest setting of like, you know, like you, it's kind of like a display size setting for how big content should be. Even at the smallest setting, apps and windows are huge. So while you have the whole room around you and the whole space in front of you and everything to place them, you can't actually fit that much on screen, or rather in your viewport. You can't actually fit that much without having to like turn your whole body around to different parts of the room. But, like, if you're just going to face generally forward and try to fill, you know, whatever like 90-ish degrees that are ideal for you to be looking at, you're not going to be able to fit that much on screen. And if you make things smaller, the distance that they are placed away from you, it will start to look too small, and you'll start to, like, you know, have to squint to see things. So this is an environment that is not made for a lot of information dense and control dense apps. That's what productivity typically requires. So I'm not saying that nobody will be able to get their work done on this. That's not true. But I think as a general purpose work device, this is not what most people are going to want. There's going to be certain fields, certain types of productivity where it's going to be amazing, but it's not going to be what most people consider productivity work on computers. That's not great on this. So again, and this is not to say that there's no use for this. There's tons of great uses, as we've gone over, but I think Apple having focused on entertainment for this first generation of this product is very wise, because on the entertainment front, it's excellent. And on the productivity front, it's really not.
If you want a distraction-free writing environment where you just have one text editing window in front of you, like there's all those apps that did that on the Mac, like, oh, we'll fade out all your other windows, or we'll hide them all or whatever. Like, this, it's perfect, because what you can have is one pretty big window directly in front of you. And if you're just writing text and you want that distraction of your environment and you want to be on the moon and you just have your text editing window and you have a physical keyboard, you're off to the races. That is your productivity environment. But when Marcus's productivity, he's like, what if you're like doing something on the ATP CMS and you're editing HTML and BBEdit and you've got a web browser window open to preview and you're making images in Photoshop and then you're saving them and then you're putting them in the folder and then copying them into the Git directory and making directories for the file and then you're going back and reloading it and then you've got Docker running, right? Like, that's too much.
Not even, doesn't even have to be that complicated. Even just like if you're going to have like four apps open where you're like moving data between them, like even if it's just as simple as like, you know, notes, email, photos, and a web browser, like that, this is, you know, it doesn't have to be like a nerdy developer workflow to run into problems here. Even like regular like office work and email and stuff like that, you will hit these issues. And it's, again, it's not that you can't do it, but I think you will quickly...
You'll feel less efficient.
Yeah, and I think you will very quickly go back to doing it on a PC or even an iPad. Like, I think you'll find that a lot better.
You'll feel less efficient. You'll be turning your head and or rotating your seat much more than you thought you might. And it will, like, it's again, it's why I'll do a certain amount of things on my iPad and my phone, but at a certain point, I get frustrated, and I just get up and leave the room, get off my butt, leave the room I'm in, walk to my Mac, and then it's like... It's like
flying.
Now I can, and you might be saying, oh, it's because you're old and you're used to the computer or whatever. That's not it. Like, this is what I tried to get on the spatial computing post. Like, there is the efficiency of humans doing things increases to the degree that we can leverage abilities that we have essentially innately, like the ability to find things with our hands and feel them and move them around. And the farther we get from that, the more sort of like remote we are from that, the more we feel like we're steering a thing that's steering a thing that's moving a thing. The less efficient it feels, because then some part of our brain is working on that part of it. Whereas when, you know, when you're using your phone, which is the newer device, so that it's not just because I'm old and used to Macs, the phone is the newer device, and yet flick scrolling, how many people have you had to teach to flick scroll? People pick that up faster than they pick up like breastfeeding. Like, it's just like it's, you know, that was referencing a thing of like intuitive interfaces from like Togazini interfaces or whatever, like Tognazini, I always get his name wrong. The interface had to be intuitive, and the idea is like they don't have to be taught. You just innately know how to do them. And the counter saying to that back in the 80s was the only thing that's intuitive is the nipple. Like, what thing do you not need to be taught? You don't need to teach a baby to breastfeed, which is not really true if you've ever had a baby. But anyway, that was the idea. Nothing can ever be intuitive, as in you're already born knowing it. But Our genes are nicely designed to let us learn to manipulate the world around us with our hands eventually when we stop being useless little babies. And that's because the one did that less well didn't pass on their genes, right? So we're all here in the 3D world with our meat bodies and grabbing things, seeing things with our hands and grabbing them and manipulating them is something that we do not need to spend much mental energy on once we reach a certain age. And almost everything in Vision Pro is not like that. One thing that is like that is looking around in wonder at the amazing things we're seeing. We're great at that. But doing the gesture to scroll with the little pinchy thing, so far from flick scrolling through Twitter with your thumb. So far from that.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of building off the productivity limitations and trade-offs here with, you know, sizing and density and everything, it leads me into Mac screen sharing. This is the feature where you can project a Mac screen into Vision Pro, give it a large screen, make it, you know, 10 feet wide or whatever, well, you know, whatever you want to do with it. I know this is an area that a lot of people thought and hoped that that would revolutionize their life. And I think it's kind of getting mixed reviews. And I think there's good reason for that. In my experience, I did this for a few hours the other day, trying to just get some work done on my Mac. In this mode where I'm in the Vision Pro looking at a large screen that is being projected from my laptop because I was away from my main office. So I'm like, this is perfect. I'm staying at this house for a little while. I'm like, this is great. I can just have my laptop and not bring my XDR because it would be, you know, large and cumbersome to do that. And I can just have my laptop and I'll use the screen in the Vision Pro. Perfect. I'm not going to be doing this very frequently. So first of all, performance was great. I didn't notice any lag or compression artifacts. Performance of, like, viewing your Mac screen in the Vision Pro, I found to be great. It's just too blurry. Everything is blurry. Everything. And part of this, I think a big part of this is, as we were saying last episode, that, you know, they're rendering the Mac screen down to a lower resolution to send it over the wire. Or over the wireless. to be displayed. So you have some loss right there where, you know, whatever the high-res Mac screen that I have on my MacBook Pro, that's being sent it's being rendered at a higher resolution virtually, then shrunk down to the 4K display stream to be displayed inside a virtual window on a device that is simulating this window being shown but showing it to your eyeballs with around 4K of pixels each. So there's a lot of scaling and reduction of detail going on in this process, in this pipeline. And I have found that at the default setting of basically the simulated 5K amount of space, it's really pretty bad. If you push it one resolution step down, which gives you basically 1080p at 2x, so like a 20-inch-ish screen, that is, or like a 24 or whatever it is. Anyway, that is better. It just makes everything larger, and that fixes one big problem in the sense that you can then push it further from you virtually. You can push it back to the ideal distance of 1.3 meters because when I did it for a couple hours the other day, I had the regular default 5K resolution, and I positioned it closer to me the way I would position a screen that size, and I got massive eye strain from doing that for a couple hours. I felt awful. My eyes were exhausted. I think this was me experiencing VAC. I hadn't really thought about it before, but afterwards I'm like, I put it too close that for the focal distance thing. This is VAC. Now I get it. Okay. So what I have found is that if I'm going to do the Mac monitor, the right way to do it is to put it at or to leave it at that 1.3 meter default distance and to have it be, you know, larger in the Vision Pro, like scale the window up so it's large so that the detail works at that distance, and also have it set at the simulated 1920 resolution, which is the one step down from default. And what this results in is a still kind of blurry, you know, fine performing window that is not that much higher resolution than the screen in my 16-inch MacBook Pro. It's only like a couple hundred pixels.
It's lower, isn't it? Because you said it's 2x 1080.
It's 2x1920x1080. Yeah, but the bookshelf. But I think the 16-inch is something lower than that a little bit. But it's not. What I ended up creating was a very complicated, limited, still blurry setup that is only marginally better than my laptop's built-in display in screen space. And so to me, that is just not worth it. It was there's too many downsides, there's too many gotchas, there's too many what ifs, and also the reality is having carried both the Vision Pro and my 16-inch laptop in the same backpack, it's heavy. Like this, it would have to be really great to have that be worth it. And for me, this is just it's just not worth it. I hope in the future, if the Vision Pro gets much higher resolution screens down the road, which I assume it will eventually. I mean, it might be a while, but if the Vision Pro can, like, you know, get, you know, the 2X version of what it has now, you know, basically 8K screens in each eye or whatever that would be, I think there might be enough resolution at that point to make the Mac pass through, like, really good for my standards. But the way it is now, it is just a very, very cumbersome way to get a very blurry screen of your MacBook Pro, and it's just not worth it to me.
And it's not just the fact that it might be blurry. It's like the dream of having a big monitor, whether in real life or a virtual one, is that you can see more stuff, like that it is higher resolution. Like the XDR isn't just the same resolution as a studio display, but bigger. It has more pixels, and that means we can see more stuff, right? And in the Mac Retina world, there's whatever the standard PPI is, 200 and change or whatever. Adding more stuff, it adds more information. But what you're forced to do is take this virtual 4K window and make it no more information dense, possibly less information dense, than your actual laptop screen. And at that point, the size of the window no longer really matters, except for ergonomics of maybe not having your head looking down at a laptop, having it look across. You're not getting the benefit that we want of, like, I can have a really big screen. Because when we say that with a Mac, like, I have a really big screen, it's like, now I can have more windows. And you say that because you got more pixels. But you're not getting more pixels. No matter how big you make that window, it's 2x a 1080 screen, and you're not getting any more information. So the dream of having a big monitor is not being realized. And at that point, like you said, you could just look at your laptop screen, which is going to be sharper. It's maybe ergonomically less good, because, you know, sort of looking down at your laptop that's attached to the keyboard is one of the many reasons the laptops are bad. But and in Vision Pro, like, you know, you separate that. The keyboard is down here by your hands, and the laptop is ergonomically directly in front of you, and that may be better, but it's not like what people want out of the experience is like, I can't have a big Mac monitor with me all the time, but I can have this, and this is a big Mac monitor. And no, it's not a big Mac monitor. It's a Mac monitor. It's not that big. And, you know, currently, those of us outside Apple can only have one of them. Supposedly, internally, they have a thing that can show two Mac screens, which would, I think, help a little bit, because then having two 1080 screens, that's definitely something you don't have with a laptop, I can't remember with you. But
honestly, I don't know how much that would help, because, like, to make it, to avoid what I think is my VAC problem, I have to make the screen so big, because it's like simulated further away.
It's far away, yeah.
That, like, I don't even know if I would necessarily have a lot of comfortable room to have two of them in my field of view at once. Like, because the way it feels comfortable to avoid VAC, it almost feels like you are using your computer on a large TV. Like, if you ever, like, mm-hmm. you know, wired it with HDMI to a big TV, it feels a lot like that. And so I don't know if that would solve my problem.
I mean, I don't know how people use dual monitors all the time anyway, is I don't like the head turning. That's just why I like the one big monitor. But yeah, I would imagine you'd have to turn your head. And at least, because again, that is another advantage that the Vision Pro has that a laptop doesn't, or is that you don't have to take up physical space with it. So if you do have two monitors, you can have one over there and one over here, and you just turn or swivel your seat, and now you've got double the information, both equally dense, which is better than just one of them. Again, you can't even do that now, although, like, the rumor is inside Apple you can do it, but someday we might be able to. But yeah, I think the solution to this is probably eventually going to be resolution, I suppose. So, but we're not quite there yet.
Yeah,
all right,
resolution,
hold on,
will solve this. Hold on, I'll get to 1 second.
Well, I want to, Bill, if you don't mind, I'd like to tell you my Mac virtual display.
So what I was going to say is, let's do, hi, future Casey. Let's do let's do all of your impressions now. But what I was thinking was, should we save? Let's save our experiences demoing it for other people for the after show, because I have a little bit to say there. It's kind of fun, and so, and I think that would be a good after show. And we're not going to have time for anything else. So let's do demoing for other people in the after show, if that works for you.
That does. However, I do have a funny train story that needs to fit somewhere. I don't care where, but it needs to fit somewhere.
Oh, okay. Well, so for your impressions that you're going to do now, would the train story be a better after show when we do our demoing stuff before the theme song?
They can both be, train story and demos can both be after show.
Let's do that because the train story's quick.
So you'll do your review now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was just trying to build off Mac
Talk
Virtual
about the
Display.
Mac stuff using the Mac.
If you have more to say, then
that's
feel
the end
free
of my
to
standard
more.
Review content.
Oh, okay. Then that's a perfect segue.
All right.
So that's actually a really good time for me to jump in because I have thoughts about Mac Virtual Display and just generally thoughts about the device. I am not going to say that anything you've said is wrong or incorrect, particularly for you and, you know, the way your eyes work and so on and so
comma.
Forth. I fucking love Mac Virtual Display. I have admittedly used it very briefly. I have not had a 2-hour session with it. So consider your source here. It has been very brief sessions here and there, but it has been incredible. I think some of the difference and some of the reason I'm so excited about this is because I willingly chose a 14-inch laptop. I don't have a 16-inch laptop, so I have considerably less screen real estate than you do. Additionally, I just happen to be traveling, which is not too dissimilar from what you're working with your, you know, temporary housing and all that. But I was in a hotel room. You know how often it is I have a nice 4K display in a hotel room? Friggin' never. Literally never. So I thought it was tremendous. I loved that I could make the screen hilariously large. Yes, that does mean I need to move my neck and move me, or, you know, twist my head and move my head around in order to see everything. Don't care. It was all gigantic. So no matter how bad my eyes are, and that's not, I really don't think that I had problem with crispness in terms of the device. I think it's just because I need things to be a little bit bigger because I'm old and because I have terrible eyes. And so anyways, I could have a physically gigantic 4K resolution screen right in front of me. And then I can put the VisionOS Slack on one side of it. This is what my blog post was about, you know, right before it came out. I can put messages on the other side. I can put Safari above or further to the side. I can put a freaking video. I can watch, you know, Wakanda Forever. I keep picking on that because that's when I watch it. I can watch Wakanda Forever off in the corner. Whatever, man. I've got infinite canvas, baby. I can put whatever, wherever. And it is great. The other thing is, holy flipping crap, how does Universal Control work as well as it does? It is not perfect, but it is astonishing how good a job it does. Because what you're doing, Universal Control, means you can use your Mac's keyboard and your Mac's mouse to control things even within VisionOS, just like you can with an iPad, right? Doing that with a keyboard is not that remarkable. Like, whatever. Yeah, that stands to reason. If you're looking at a text field and you start typing, okay, put the letters in there. Fine. However, the pointer is so good. And the thing that's good about it, like, of course, it's just a mouse pointer. Like, it looks like an iPad pointer within one window. You look at another window, there's the pointer. Sometimes, usually, you can go between windows. I don't know. It's in 3D space. I don't know how. I guess I am looking, I guess. And maybe that's what it's doing. And I'm attributing to magic what's really just my own gaze. But it feels like freaking magic. It is so good. And that's extremely important because what you were saying a little while ago about needing considerably less information density, I think in terms of visual, not acuity, but in order to see things, for me, I don't think I necessarily need less information density in order to see and read and whatnot. Where the information density becomes a problem is when you have a lot of controls that are not spaced out very well. The perfect example of this for me is basically any iPad app that's running on VisionOS, in particular things like Slack. So if you think of Slack, and I don't, as much as I love to slag on Slack, I don't think this is really a Slack being garbage issue. I think it's just that it's a hard problem and Slack has not been designed specifically for VisionOS. But if you're trying to choose between like the icon of the Slack you're on all the way in the upper left or the home DMs activity, I'm looking at the Mac version, but I think it's the same on iOS or VisionOS. In order to get my eyes to correctly focus the one I want, it's like John was saying way earlier, I need to like look harder or look past where I think I need to look. And I think it's because all of these different buttons are just too close together. There's just not enough space between them. And even though the eye tracking is astonishingly good, at least, I mean, I have nothing compared to, but it is astonishingly good, but still, I think there needs to be more or less density, more space between these different controls. But if you have a mouse, you can mash that bad boy right on the icon you want because it's a little blob hovering right over the icon you care about. And so I freaking love it. I was on the train coming back from New York and I had Wakanda Forever over to the side. I had my screen, my Mac screen in front of me. I was balancing our checkbook because it just so happened that our, you know, statement came in. Well, first of all, I'm doing that in complete and utter privacy because my Mac screen is black. Second of all, I now have considerably more real estate, so I can put my little, it's not Quicken, what is it called? Banktivity, who I think sponsored way back when, but I'd been using the app before that. I had Banktivity on one side of my screen. I have the PDF of our statement on the other side of the screen, and I don't need to be showing anyone how rich or poor we are. You know, nobody's looking over my shoulder at my credit card statement or checking statement or whatever. I can do all this in a big, huge window that's kind of in the seat back in front of me, which is a little weird. But I can do that all right there. I have a 4K, an LG Ultrafine 4K on the train. That is amazing. I cannot wait to be that friggin' loser that's using this at the library or Wegmans or whatever. I don't know if I have the gumption to do it yet. I was thinking maybe I would like rent a little meeting room and I would be the only, reserve a little meeting room at the library and I'll be the only one in there and maybe I'll face the wall so it's not too obvious, but it would be so amazing to have this at the library. I'm so excited for it. I am so pleased with how Mac Virtual Display and Universal Control work together. It is amazing and it blows my mind. Again, my eyes are different. I haven't used it for 2+ hours straight. Maybe if I did, I would change my tune, but from what I know today, it's amazing and I love it.
One thing to note about you saying how you like set up like, oh, here's my Mac screen in front of me, and then here's the VisionOS version of Slack to my left, and here's the Wakanda Forever movie over here. This is one area where we'll definitely benefit from advancements here. The field of view, like I said before when I was talking about the specs, is only 100 degrees. And so when you were saying, oh, look, I can have all these things. I have this here, this left, this right, whatever. You have to end up turning your head to see those.
On a big
Mac monitor, those can all be in front of you. And why is that? Because our eyeballs have better than 100 degree field of view. Like,
that's fair.
And, like, there's lots of people on YouTube trying to show the reviews like, oh, it looks like you're looking through goggles. Like, you don't notice it that much, but the field of view is limited. Right? It's limited because of the size of the screens. Like, they're not 4:3 ratio. If you see the screens when they're yanked out of it in the iFixit, they're almost kind of square, right? They're not 16:9. They're not wider. You know, they're a little bit wider than the Arthalt, right? And they combine to give you a field of view that is narrower than you expect. So you will end up having to turn your head more. And it's, in this case, assuming the information density is all right, it's not because like there's not enough, like it's because your vision is narrowed. It's like, you know, if pretend there's nothing in the headset, you rip everything out of the headset, but you still put it on your head. It's not exactly like that, but it's pretty close. Like your field of view is narrowed and that makes you have to turn your head, and that makes you have to use the ability to put things in space around you. That combined with the resolution things that Marco was complaining about mean that what you could get away with having all on one screen in front of you, even a 4K screen, all on one Mac 4K screen in just native VisionOS apps, you might have to arrayed out alongside you and have to end up turning your head because of the field of view. Although that brings up one more point that I've already heard people complaining about. I haven't heard either one of you mention, probably because you don't work like me, but you can layer windows in VisionOS. You can put one in front of another. But you probably don't want to because, as I noted, it does not feel like your hands are in there like they are on the Mac, or at least it feels like that for me. Like on the Mac, to bring a window to the front, there are caveats and asterisks on this, but you can click on places in the window and the window will come to the front. In VisionOS, as far as I know, I didn't get to test this, you can't just look at a part of the window and tap your fingers and it comes to the front. Is that right?
I don't know if that's right, but I have ended up with layered windows here and there, and it is cumbersome at best. It is not something I recommend. Like think of VisionOS as you're inside of a sphere and you can stick things on wherever you want along the sphere, but you don't want to ever have things overlap each other. It's terrible.
It's kind of weird, though, because, like, I wrote about this in my thing. Like, you know, there's the Mac has overlapping windows, right? but and they have always since the beginning had some kind of like little drawn shadow to like make it look like one is in front of the other. But if you were to like take the world of the Mac and like rotate it sideways and look, what I think both the visual and mental model we all have is that those windows are pretty close together. Like the total depth of like having three windows is not 1 foot between each of the windows. They're like, they're within millimeters of each other. They're stacked on top of each other, but more like pieces of paper would be on a desk. Imagine that desktop metaphor, right? So yes, they're magic pieces of paper where if you tap the one that's behind, suddenly that piece of paper jumps in front of the other one, but they could be literally touching despite the huge deep drop shadows that macOS draws in them, right? Where in VisionOS, you don't have to imagine. It's literally a 3D space, and you could probably take a ruler in the virtual world and measure the distance between them, but it's so weird that, like, I mean, some of us, certainly me, are comfortable having tons of overlapping, essentially, pieces of paper on our Mac screens, but when you have four of them in VisionOS, and they're, one of them is in front of the other ones, it's like, oh no, I can't figure out how to deal with it, and I think part of it is because you don't feel like you can reach in there and manipulate them like you could papers on a desk, and like we all do windows on a screen, but I think the other part is that just the window management controls are meant to keep you at a distance, right? You have to look, you have to activate them, that's the only way for them to move things, there's no real title bars to speak of, or like, you know, window control widgets are differently arranged. Like it's not set up to like the whole Mac, all the Mac interface is like, look, the window Chrome, we've got window control widgets, we've got a title bar, we used to have scroll bars back in the day. That is the window frame. There used to be an actual literal window frame before they got rid of that in macOS 10, and then all your content is inside it. And those frames, we have ways to manipulate them. You can grab them, you can move them around, you can use utilities to do stuff. And like VisionOS is like, you're not going to be doing a lot of that. You can grab the bar on the bottom and you can move them. You can grab the little thing in the corner and move them around. But it just seems like it's not made to make it really easy for you to shuffle those papers around.
And I think also a huge limitation there is just the precision of the eye tracking. You know, the design of the system apps is pretty good to kind of help conceal how coarse-grained I think it actually is. You don't have super fine pointer accuracy with the eye tracking, and so a lot of the mechanics of operating overlapping and stacked windows requires you to like, oh, let me get this pointer between these two and get, you know, grab this,
yeah,
edge of this
snag
one.
The corner of a window, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I think in VisionOS things have to be larger and more, you know, more chunky than that, and so
I think it's like
that's
the
one
iOS
of the
keyboard
reasons
where
it doesn't
really work. It's trying to like average, like, well, where do we think, like, I know where you did tap, yeah, right? But where do we think, and if it has to make that choice and you're trying to snag the corner of some window that's poking out from behind another one, the right bet is you were actually trying to look at the upper right corner of the frontmost window and not, oh, what he was actually trying to do was snag that little piece of the window that's poking out. I snag pieces of windows that are poking out all the time. That's how I use my Mac all the time. But like, that's, if you were to guess, like if you just had an average probability cloud of based on where you're looking, which I imagine if there was like a debug mode, you could see like the actual like giant point cloud of where your eyeballs are racing all over the place and it has to average them together and kind of guess like the iOS keyboard. Yeah, but what did they mean to look at? It's always going to guess the top right corner of the frontmost window. It is never going to guess the 2 pixels of the window that's behind it.
Indeed. No, the Mac virtual display stuff was great. I really, really like the idea of spatial computing. Maybe it's a gimmick and maybe I'll get over it quickly. But again, on the train, and I think in the post show, we're going to briefly talk about my train experience because there's a couple of funny things that happened. But on the train, at one point, I was watching the movie, and to my right-hand side, I put, you know, Apple Maps, watching myself, you know, come down the East Coast so I could see where I was. Off to the left, I had messages just so I could see, you know, if anyone was trying to send me a text or whatever the case may be. And it was amazing. Yes, I do have to turn my head a bit. That doesn't seem to bother me as much as I guess it bothers you, John. But it was amazing. And I was doing this privately. I was doing this in a tube that was not in the air, but that was hurtling down the eastern seaboard at, like, you know, anywhere between 20 and 120 miles an hour. Like, this, the technology is amazing, and I can't believe that I could do this. And broadly, I think we've mostly covered all of the kind of different aspects of the Vision Pro. spatial videos are very cool. I will be taking them more frequently. I don't think it's going to be, like John had said quite a bit earlier on, I'm not going to do every video that way, but having some moments like that are really cool. I am a sucker for the panoramas. I do not argue that they need a lot more fidelity, but nevertheless, I am a sucker for them. I think they're really neat. The 3D movies, in the sense of like Disney Plus 3D movies, I think I said earlier, you know, you get a 3D viewport. That's neat. I would probably choose a 3D movie for the Vision Pro if I had the choice, but if I didn't, you know, I'm not going to miss it. I agree with what Marco was saying about the environments. They are extremely cool. I wish I purposely didn't use them on the train because I wanted to see if people were, you know, staring at me, and we'll talk about whether or not they were later on. But I briefly turned it on toward the end of the journey when I knew I was about to take the whole Vision Pro off. And suddenly you are somewhere else, and it is truly incredible. And like John had said earlier, take all my money, National Geographic, Apple, I don't care who you are. Take all my money. Give me all the environments. Take all my money, because I don't need to go on a graycation if I can just go to Mount Hood or, you know, Shenandoah National Park or whatever the case may be. Take all my money, please and thank you. Well, not that you haven't already, but take more of all of my money.
They're very good at this.
Yeah, they're very
efficient. It's basically consumable. We would all pay $5 for one of these, even just like, I don't even know if this will look cool. $5, take it. Like, it's like paying $5 to go to a place. And you're like, well, what if you go there and it's boring? It was only $5. Like, it is that is a money-making machine if you can produce compelling ones of these. And let alone when eventually someone makes a game of that fidelity that you're in the headset, that's more difficult, because the beautiful thing about the environments is you're sitting still, which is ideal. Once things start moving around and, you know, there's anyone who's played VR games knows the difficulty of the virtual world coming in conflict with your physical world and you walking into walls or hitting your coffee table and stuff like that. But sitting still in the middle of one of these places is like the platonic ideal of like, look, you're in the sweet spot. Sell me these things for $5. Make $1 million.
Yep. So all in all, I don't think it's for me to make a judgment statement about whether or not this thing was worth $3,500. Sitting here now, and ask me again in a month, and ask me again in a year, but sitting here now, is this a necessary purchase for me? Leaving aside that I feel like I needed one for this very moment of talking about it. Is it a necessary purchase? No. Do I really want to spend $3,500+ on it? No, not really. But it is so cool. And, you know, how lucky are we to be alive right now that this is what's being released? And everyone keeps saying, and I think half jokingly, half seriously, this is the worst that the Vision Pro will ever be. And that's true, but it is freaking cool and it is freaking amazing. And I am so thankful and lucky that we get to experience this, not, you know, we the three of us. I'm so thankful for it and so lucky that this is what's going on. And I don't think this is going to become the Accidental Vision Pro podcast, but we're probably going to have to season of it for the next few weeks because, oh my word, there's so much to say. There's so much to capture. There's so much to process. There's just so much here, and I'm so excited.
Yeah, and because you put it very well, because like there's so much on this platform. Like we still haven't talked really that much about pretty large areas of it. Like I still haven't really tried any games. Like there's not that many to start with, but yeah, still haven't tried any games. I still haven't watched an entire movie. We didn't even talk. I didn't talk too much about like, you know, photo and video consumption and stuff like that. Like there's still so much to talk about here.
Personas.
Oh, you're right.
You're right.
Yeah, that entire thing. Like there's so we're going to be covering this over a few weeks. We're obviously running a little long tonight, but this is going to be a process that we cover over a few weeks. But. Or probably months, more likely. But I don't want to have to end on a negative note that, you know, because I said the productivity angle wasn't very good, because whenever something new comes out, you know, we try to wedge it into what we already know. I've ranted about this before, but I'm going to do it again because it's important. When the iPad came out, everyone said, we're going to stop buying computers. This will replace them. It didn't. For some people, it might have, but for most people, it didn't. And that's fine. Now we have another thing. When the watch came out, so many nerds were like, oh my God, this phone I have right now might be the last phone I ever buy because I'm just going to do everything on my watch. And then it turned out, no, we all still have phones. But, you know, some of us also have watches. And that's what this is. When this was, you know, announced but not yet out, and we were all trying to make plans of how we're going to rationalize purchasing this device by saying, you know, we're going to get all of our work done on this. We're never going to have to buy a Big Mac again or whatever. I think that's wrong, but that doesn't mean it's a failure. It just means it's for other things mostly. And, you know, again, there are some people who do all their work on iPads and don't buy laptops anymore. But most people who need laptop-style work still buy laptops to do it. There are people who are going to be able to do all their productivity work with a Vision Pro, but I think most people with productivity work are going to choose to do it on other things instead. But the Vision Pro can do a whole lot of stuff really, really well in different areas. And that, I think, is extremely exciting. Again, even if I could just be transported to those environments and just sit for a few minutes, that's amazing. What
it's
it does,
like the iPad, like we're saying, like, oh, the iPad has to be better at some things, and one of the things the iPad is better at is like, oh, sitting on your couch and casually scrolling the web. You could do that on the laptop, but the iPad does that job in a more pleasing way. The Vision Pro is exactly like that. A lot of things that you can do both on a Vision Pro and on a Mac and on an iPad, some of those the Vision Pro does them the best, right? And you know, I would argue looking at 3D video, clear winner. Like, the other ones can't do it at all, so thumbs up, right? And I had a TV that used to be able to do it, and it sucked. So, right, it's like there's a competition among all the devices in your life of like, yeah, I can do this here, I can do this here, or I can do this here, but which one makes me want to do it on it? And, the iPad is a perfect example of like, aren't you doing things that you could also do on your phone and that you could also do on your Mac? Why are you choosing to do them on the iPad? And you're like, well, the iPad screen is bigger than my phone, but it doesn't have a keyboard attached, and I can sit on the couch to do it, and it feels more comfortable. And it's like all these nuanced reasons, but that you find yourself, like, what do you choose to use your iPad for versus what you use your phone for versus what you use computer for? People will naturally gravitate to wherever they are most comfortable doing that thing. And that's just with a bunch of rectangles that are screens that are different sizes. They're not even that different from each other. This is so different that the things that it does well, and there are things that it does well, it basically has no competition. There is no other thing that you own, unless you own other VR headsets, that can do this stuff at all. So I feel like the place in the ecosystem for devices like this, like, it's well carved out. The fact that the iPad could find a place when there was a rectangle that was slightly smaller that did all the same things is a testament to how easy it will be for this thing to find a place in people's lives once it doesn't cost $3,500 and weigh a ton.
Yeah. All right. Hi, Future Casey. So I think let's end here. We're running so long. Let's save demoing for other people for next week and just that's do fine. Your train story as the after show.
That it's very short, but I think that's probably perfect, for the best.
Because we're at 2:40. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Thanks to our sponsors.
No. I'm sorry. I talked right over you. I forgot. I'm sorry.
There
it's
is
100%
a part of the show
fault.
That Marco has to do now. No,
100% my fault. I apologize.
Just so you'll be back here with me waiting to see if he'll say the app this week. It's always exciting. Oh, no. I've influenced it. It's too late.
All right. Thanks to our sponsors this week, Squarespace and Trade Coffee. And thanks to our members who support us at atv.fm/join. You can... Oh, that's... I just said it wrong.
You messed it up. You overthought it. Oh, no. Take two.
Oh, my God. Now I feel like Casey redoing everyone's names.
Don't get inside your head about it.
All right. Have I ever had to redo the outro? Oh, my God. All right. All right, thanks to our sponsors this week, Squarespace and Trade Coffee. And thanks to our members who support us directly. You can join us at atv.fm/join. And we will talk to you next week. So I got to hear a train story. What was it like using this on a train with people who could maybe see you?
So on the way up, I was in business class, as we discussed in the bootleg and may or may not have discussed on the release version of the show. And there were not a ton of there weren't a lot of people on the train anyway, but there weren't a ton of people. And my understanding before I went on the journey was that it is the travel mode or whatever. I don't forget exactly what it's officially called.
I think that's what it's called.
It's OK. So travel mode is. It wasn't clearly stated as far as I could tell until in the last couple of days, or maybe I just discovered it in the last couple of days, but it is not really travel mode. It's plane mode. It's called travel mode to John's point, but it's actually plane mode.
Because we already have something called airplane mode.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly right. And so I talked to a couple of people on the inside who indicated to me, yeah, it might work on the train, but probably not. And so I tried it initially on the way from Richmond to DC, and that's relevant because at DC, you stop for a while, and I'll explain why in a minute. But I tried on the way to Richmond from Richmond to DC, and you go into control center, and or it, maybe it's the thing. No, it is control center. You go into control center because there's like something before control center. I don't know what they call that, but then there's control center off of it. Yeah, anyways, you go into control center, and I, you know, tapped on the little airplane because I was turning on airplane mode. I didn't realize until the return trip that, no, you idiots, that's the turn off all the radios mode. I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know what I was thinking. But
I mean, were you looking for travel mode, or was it in your brain, I'm looking for plane mode?
I think it's because it was in my brain. I knew that I didn't want to turn off the radios. I don't want the traditional definition of airplane mode, but because I was, you know, just convinced in tunnel visioning on airplanes, I tapped or, you know, pinched on airplane mode, and I saw the radios turn off, but I still just didn't think twice about it because I'm a friggin' idiot. And so I put the thing on, right? You know, I was able to do that, and it was getting kind of upset that I forget exactly what the dialogue says, but like tracking failed or something like that, and things are not going well. And then I turn on the airplane mode, which again, as I later realized, was not what I wanted. But this in the story, I don't realize that yet. And sure enough, like, windows are bouncing all over the place. I'm to some degree bouncing all over the place. Like, it's not great. It's not great at all. I think I had the thing on my face for a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And I was like, well, that's that. Well, we get to DC, and the way trains work here is, or down here in Virginia, is that in Virginia, the commuter, or not computer, the travel train, the people train, actually travels on train tracks that are owned by the freight train company. So not only that, but the freight train company has no need for electric trains because to my limited understanding, I don't know if they would work as well. If I'm wrong, it doesn't matter. But one way or another, there's a diesel locomotive pulling the Amtrak train south of Washington, D.C. And then when you're in D.C., you stop for like half an hour. Well, they literally switch locomotives from diesel to electric. I knew this going into it. I knew it before my trip to Marco. You know, it's all fine. It's no big deal. Well, once we get to D.C., we're stationary. So I'm like, oh, hell yeah. I'm going to turn on, you know, a movie, and I start, you know, Wakanda Forever. And we're there for 20, 30 minutes, and we go to take off. And again, I think that I have travel mode on. I don't, but I think I do. So we go to take off, and I don't know if you saw the Casey Neistat video, but he was on the New York City subway, and he was sitting, you know, with his back to the outside of the car. So the car is moving laterally from his perspective. And when he took off, the screen just stayed behind. You know, it just went through the center of the train of the subway car and stayed behind. It's very funny to see. I don't know if he had travel mode on or not. I really don't. But when we took off, immediately I went through the screen because the screen was in front of me and the screen stayed still as I went through the screen. It was hilarious.
You could have turned around and looked at the back of it. Yeah, but it would have been entirely white.
It would have been entirely white, yeah. But immediately I took the Vision Pro off and I was like, well, that's that. And I was really disappointed because I really wanted to be able to use this thing on the train. In no small part because I had 6.5 hours to do something. And it would have been great to watch a movie or do whatever. And outside of the time that they're switching locomotives, there's AC outlets right at the seats. So I have infinite battery power for all intents and purposes. I was really genuinely kind of bummed about it. On the way back today, I was doing the same thing, and I'm like, you know, let me try it again just to see. And I did this, I forget when it was. I don't recall if I did it in DC or sometime before, but one way or another, I decided, right, I'm going to try it again. And I look at control center and I'm like, wait, what the hell is this, like goggles with like other like ray or like goggle ripples off of it. And I tap that and it says, oh, travel mode enabled. Son of a gun, I screwed this up. I didn't even realize. So this whole time on the way up, I probably could have been using the Vision Pro, but I didn't, and because I thought I couldn't, because it was janky as hell. Well, the reason it was janky as hell is because I'm an idiot. So it was not perfect. You know, things were dancing about a bit. Like John, you had said early on in your review that the home screen was just locked into place. And I completely agree with you. Things were not locked into place as this train was jostling, you know, and rumbling down the track. And I don't think it was bad at all. In fact, it worked better than I thought. But at that point, I realized, well, holy smokes, I can use this thing for the remaining, you know, 2 to 3 hours of the train ride or whatever the heck it was. And so I was very happy about that. But I really was bummed and remain bummed that, you know, I couldn't use it the rest of the time. But to get back to your question, I didn't I think one person walked by and gave me like a double take. But other than that, nobody seemed to give a crap. And I was very surprised because I expected everyone who walked by was going to be like, what is this idiot doing? Look at this guy with his fancy goggles. Wasn't he cool? Nobody cared. I don't think a lot of people noticed, but nobody cared. And I was very surprised by that. And it actually made me feel a lot better about the idea of using it anywhere. Am I going to go to Wegmans where it's just like a cafeteria area and sit there and use it? Maybe eventually, but not today and not tomorrow. But I genuinely think the way I'm going to ease myself into this is, you know, renting or I keep saying renting, reserving because it's free, you know, reserve a room at the library and probably face the wall because I don't want to call that much attention to myself. But that's a way I can ease into it. And I really think this will be a very powerful tool for me to use anywhere other than home that I want to get work done. But it was a truly hilarious moment watching the screen go through my body as we took off from DC northbound. I couldn't help but laugh when that happened. It was very, very funny.
All right, John, how long do you think it takes Casey to use it at Wegmans? I say 1 week.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm of two minds. I think he'll get over the embarrassment quickly, but I'm wondering if he will tire of its utility in the same way that you kind of have for productivity tasks.
Yeah,
so that's the conflict. But yeah, I think feel like you'll. Not a lot of people are going to have these for a while, but like I think as you said on the train, fewer people care what you're doing than you think.
Right. Yeah.
Like in general, have nothing to do with Vision Pro, just like whatever.
Yeah. And I think the use case on an airplane is much stronger than the use case in most public
places. People already wear eye masks on airplanes. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like you're already used to people like blocking out all of their surroundings, including their eyes for their own comfort and amusement. So yeah, that I think is a clear win, but in most other places, like in public, I don't see this catching on. Who knows?
We'll see.
AirPods caught on, but it's a little different.
Titles. I'm going to bed.
Oh, my God. It's so late.
Look at it harder is very good, but
I think
suggested
that's the best
it.
One.
I suggested a variant of that, but I think it's just look harder without the ad and the id.
Look at it harder is better.
No, look harder is better.
No, because I think I like look at it harder.
Look harder. Think Russian. Think different. Look harder. Look harder is clearly better.
No, because look harder could... I feel like that's less... That seems more reasonable. Like, where is that thing? Well, look harder. Whereas look at it harder...
It does have that double meaning, which I like. Because otherwise, the single meaning in the show is kind of like a complaint about the Vision Pro, where I wasn't tracking where I was looking. Whereas look harder says... Take a deeper look at the Vision Pro. So it has a second meaning that's not as mean.
I'd still like look at it harder more, although it is close for me. I also suggested, no, not that one. That one wasn't that great. My hands are in there, which I thought was kind of funny, although a little bit on the double entendre side of things. Neither hair nor makeup I thought was good. And there's one other one I thought. Where did the other one go? Maybe I'm wrong.
I like the convincing phase. But I like look at it harder much better than
that. Oh, that was the other one. Wave my head around like a madman, which is a little bit long.
Yeah,
but
that's too
long. Yeah. I look at it harder as the winner then, unless somebody stops me.
Yep.
Well, it's better. Let the record show that I voted for Look Harder and it is a better title.
Mm-hmm. Disagree. Mm-hmm.
I can hardly wait for all the bootleg people, all your flying monkeys, to tell us how wrong we are.
All right. Thank you everybody for listening. I can't believe hundreds of you made it this far. We had over 400 listeners for the entire live stream.
Go book it's yourself a Vision Pro demo. It's free. Get there
actually,
before
no, truly.
The pants get all sweated up.
No, really, really, truly. I couldn't agree with John Moore. He's wrong about the title, but he's right about this. Definitely go do a demo. It's only going to take a half an hour of your time, hopefully, and it is worth it. It is really, truly worth it to see what this is about, because no amount of explaining, no amount of video can really hammer home.
Especially
what this
if,
is.
Like me, you've never used a VR headset before.
Same.
I'm kind of glad I skipped all the janky screen door effect, crappy low resolution things. It's great for this to be the first one. It's kind of like having the Mac be my first GUI.
Bye, goodbye, live people.
Bye, live people.
Thanks for being live people.
Yep. We'll see you next week.